It's time for TWiT. This week in tech, Paris Martineau is here from Wired.com. We've got Patrick Beja from France. And from travels all around the world, Mike Elgin is back. And boy, do we have a big agenda to talk about today. Mark Zuckerberg's post saying he's going to change the way Facebook works. Or will he? Elizabeth Warren says it's time to break up the tech giants. And a trip down memory lane with Foursquare. Turns out they're still watching your every move. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT. This Week in Tech. Episode 709, recorded Sunday, March 10th, 2019. Third-party dog hats. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. From the founders of Carbonite comes the cloud storage technology that's disrupting the industry. See for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. Go to wasabi.com, click the free trial, and use the offer code TWIT. And by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at wordpress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/TWIT. And by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit atlassian.com/IT to see what IT can be by giving their products a try for free. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use invoicing and accounting software. If you don't believe us, try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/TWIT. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And there are some massive stories we're going to get into, partly because South by Southwest is going on, but partly because, well, the news never sleeps. Mike Elgin is here. No one knows it better than Mike. In fact, it sleeps so little, Mike's actually moved to Europe to get away from it. Mike.
I try to move as often as possible, Leo. Yes.
Mike is, of course, an inveterate, longtime computer technology journalist, watcher of the trends. He blogs at Elgin.com. That's where his Mike's List is, which is a great newsletter. Actually, kind of an antidote to the daily tech news. It's fun stuff. And it's really
fun.
Great.
It's cynical. It's just bursting with sour notes, Leo. It's just, yes.
Okay.
No, it's what I do is I dig up. The main list is 10 things that are the most absurd things in technology.
It's like the Sour Patch Kids of and technology is what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Oh, my God. Is that go back to that.
That's the future right there you're looking at. That is... Yeah, that's Buscemi being...
Buscemi being Jennifer Lawrence.
Buscemi,
being,
thank you.
Being Jennifer... J-Law meets Steba.
Yeah, this is a deepfake article that I wrote.
Oh, and, lousy.
The long story short, deepfake is going to get so good that literally you won't be able to tell deepfake
it
from...
may already own. Have. Yeah. Also joining us from Paris, Patrick Beja. He is, I know, sorry. He is FrenchSpin.com, and he's in his kitchen, apparently. Hello, Patrick.
I am. I'm so happy that I'm joining you at a reasonable hour.
Well,
it never happens.
Is it a reasonable hour? You kind of lucked out in two ways. First of all, we did that silly thing that we do in America called spring forward. It's entering daylight saving time. But also, we've moved the start time of TWiT up by about half an hour to 45 minutes. So now it's like, what is it? Instead of midnight, it's 11:30.
Well, yeah, not only that, but I'm also in Paris. I'm often joining you from Finland.
Ah.
So now it's 10 p.m., 10:30 now.
It's nothing. It's time for
perfect.
Dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Always great to have Patrick here from French Spin.
Thank you.
And not Patrick on the Twitter. And from Wired Magazine, love to have Paris Martineau on the show. Hi, Paris.
Hi, how's it going?
Great to have you. She's in San Francisco, so she's about to be eaten by the tech bros.
I'm actually in New York.
Oh, you're in New York. I apologize.
Adjacent, I'm going to be eaten by the tech bros.
Yeah, you
all
too.
All my coworkers at will.
You
I'll
too.
I'll survive.
What's the status on HQ2? Because at first, Amazon picked Long Island City, just outside of Manhattan in the Queens, to be headquarters to. then there was an outcry, and then they said, well, if you don't want us here, we are leaving. And then the last thing I heard is, well, maybe we won't.
I don't know. The last thing I've heard is that Cuomo and a bunch of other people in New York politics are being like, please come back, Amazon. We didn't mean it. Yeah. But who knows? I think it seems like all of the local politicians here are very against it, and as well as many of the unions. So
yeah,
it's probably going to stay either not happening or stay in a contentious space for a while.
Oh, and you know how much Mr. Bezos loves contention.
Gotta have it.
So the big story of the week, well, there were several. On Wednesday, I thought the big story of the week was Mark Zuckerberg's blog post, which some say, I thought, maybe was a pivot of Facebook from a public-facing network to a privacy-facing network. Then Elizabeth Warren on Friday at South by Southwest announced, we're going to break up, if I get elected president, we're going to break up Facebook, Google, Amazon. And then she threw in an interview with Neelai Patel, almost like she hadn't even really thought of it. Yeah, and Apple too. So it was really kind of offhanded. He said, oh, you're going to break up Apple too? She said, yeah, we're going to break up Apple too. Oh, okay. Her complaint against Apple is a little bit weird. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Facebook. And then Paris wrote an article, also coming out of South By, about a company you haven't heard of in a while, a company that made its kind of famous debut at South By some years ago, Foursquare.
10 years ago, actually.
It's exactly
almost
10.
Today, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It took Austin by storm. It's taking Austin by something a little less than a storm this time with a new app called Hypertrending. But you got an interview with Dennis Crowley and saw something that I found bone-chilling, but we'll let you talk about all of that. So
yeah, it's I also hadn't thought about Foursquare maybe in a decade since it was Foursquare's heyday, but yeah, you could be forgiven for wondering whether Foursquare even still existed. But the Foursquare of today is this location data giant, rivaling the powers of Facebook and Google almost. Like, you may not even think that you're a Foursquare user if you've never used the app, but chances are that you are. Foursquare's technology powers the geofilters in Snapchat tags, tweets on Twitter. It's in AccuWeather, Uber, Apple News, Airbnb, WeChat, most Samsung phones, their photo app on Samsung.
Swarm.
And essentially, yeah, Swarm, all Foursquare's native apps. And I mean, as Foursquare's website says, if it tells you where, it's probably built on Foursquare. And all of that amounts to that Foursquare has the capability to track most people with smartphones, track their locations in real time. And Hypertrending, which is a feature for Foursquare's apps that they rolled out at South by Southwest, it shows this live map of Austin that shows basically the locations of all the phones, all the people with smartphones in Austin in real time, albeit it's aggregated and anonymized a bit. So you just see like a big circle if there's a bunch of people at one coffee shop versus a small circle if there's only two or three. But it's a real time tracking service that speaks to the amount of data that Foursquare is collecting. And when I went to go meet with Crowley on Thursday, we were going to be talking about Hypertrending, but he ended up showing me this internal game kind of app that Foursquare had been developing just among its coworkers. And it essentially is kind of like Candyland, but an app. And except for the cards that you draw, you know, in Candyland, you get cards in order to like move along the little row, the rainbow row. Except for the cards in this app are based on real people's location data and where they are really going. So he had pulled up his phone when we were meeting, and he was like, okay, well, the Candyland that he had was based on New York City. And so he's like, okay, well, I need to move to the Manhattan Bar Square next. So if I go look at whoever is in like proximity to my phone based on who Foursquare has data on, I can see that there's one person who spends a lot of time at Midtown bars. So I'm going to add him to my team. And next time this person in the real world goes to a Midtown bar and Foursquare tracks him, I'll move it forward in the game, which is just insane that this company has that sort of technology.
I kind of blame myself because when Foursquare launched 10 years ago, I jumped on it. I thought this is fun. And I would fight to be mayor of Twit with my wife or mayor of our local coffee shop. And then they pivoted to Swarm, which was basically the same thing. Foursquare became an app that would tell you about places, but Swarm was where you checked in. And I used that for a while. I think Lisa still does. I think she's in a battle with one of our engineers to be mayor of the Twit Studios. But I stopped because I thought, you've got to be mayor. It was kind of silly. But I thought, well, I've stopped, so they don't know where I am anymore. I guess I was wrong. You mentioned that Crowley wasn't sure if it was cool or creepy. Dennis, it's creepy. It's creepy. Yeah. I'll read from your article. Downstairs in the cafeteria, there are 40 people, Crowley says. He's looking at a coffee company, a real cafe on the first floor of the building they're in. 40 people. Mm-hmm. These are people that are actually there. We don't put their names. We just put their unique advertising ID. We turn that into a fake name and a fake avatar, but it is their unique advertising ID.
So basically the same. And also you can definitely de-anonymize that if you see, okay, there's one person that only goes to these like four areas.
This is my bar buddy. I keep seeing him here. It must be 439-472-133-419.
And then,
I have one question. Then you can ask yours, Patrick. This isn't from Foursquare, this information. Where this is like I'm using a Samsung phone. Is it sending location information to Foursquare?
So this, I believe in Samsung, it is Foursquare powers the geotagging features. Like whenever you take a photo, they're how it'll like show you like a little.
Yeah, I understand that. It's going to, but is it also coming out?
So Foursquare powers that. Yes, yeah.
So it's a two-way street.
In order to do that, yeah. Every time your phone takes a photo and tries to geotag it, it like sends out signals. Like it uses Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, GPS, a couple different things, and then runs that by Foursquare's like a whole list of locations, and then Foursquare is like, oh, he's at Twit Studios. But Foursquare also gets the data that you're at Twit Studios, you know?
That's the part that's weird. And this is, we're going to have
I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
And remember, Verizon got in a little bit of heat because they were sending unique IDs from their Verizon phones. They even got fined for that. Remember how much trouble Uber got in because they had a God mode that did the same thing, but only with Uber. This is 10 times worse. And Uber, by the way, is one of the apps that sends information back to Foursquare. Apple Maps, the big privacy-focused Apple sends it back. Airbnb, WeChat.
Basically any app or thing that uses location services that isn't connected directly to Facebook or Google is probably powered by Foursquare because they have the most advanced, I guess, location technology when it comes to like, pinpointing where you are.
But that's the back end of location services for Foursquare, who just happens to be very popular and so has location data on a lot of people, in the same way that Facebook or Google, for example, has a lot of data on a lot of people. The thing that they're showing now, the hyperlocal app or mode or whatever they want to call it, is completely anonymized, right? If we want to believe them, this is just an application of all the location data they already have and that many other people also have.
This is real-time and data, Patrick, not coming from the Foursquare Swarm app. This is coming from all those other apps.
I understand. So it's the location services that are used by many apps and devices.
Google can do the same thing, right? Because they get that information.
Yes, Google does on the same like with Waze, basically.
Yeah, that's my point.
But I mean, I think the difference is that most people probably don't realize that when you're using Uber or, TripAdvisor or something, or you having AccuWeather weather alerts turned on the back of your phone, that you're one, consenting to give your data to these apps, but also consenting for it to be used in the future to create some hyper-trending app. Or the thing that I find the most worrying is that when I was speaking to Crowley, he was saying that hyper-trending, it's going to turn off after South by Southwest, but the reason why they're demoing it there is for developers to be like, oh, we could use it in this way or build this app off of it going forward. And so this same information that you didn't really consent to be used in this way, even though I suppose you technically did, could be used for any number of other apps.
The thing that concerns me is...
Let Patrick finish, then go ahead.
Very quickly, I can't believe I'm going to defend this, but just to explain exactly what he's trying to do with this long post, he's saying we can basically build a catalog of the popular places in this city. at South by Southwest. And we're doing it now, showing it. We think it's cool or creepy. He acknowledges the creepy factor. And we're turning it off because we think there is something interesting here. And we want people to start thinking about these things and to kind of, you know, think about the uses and the guidelines and all of this. So the announcement here is the use of location data that, sure, we might have not realized that they had so much of it, but we know Google has a lot of it. We know Facebook has a lot of it. It's not that different. The big new thing here is, I guess, two things. First, Foursquare also has a lot of location data like the others, and they built this application with that hyper-trending mode, which, again, is anonymized and only shows the popular places in the city. So it's a way to see which locations and stores and restaurants are popular in a way that you couldn't before. So I don't know that there's something, I don't want to say new, but I don't know that it's that different from what Facebook or Google can already do. I'm not sure why it's that creepy, if I want to play a little bit of devil's advocate.
Well, here's the case on the other side. First of all, I think that they should release that game to the public, because I think that'd be a great consciousness-raising exercise for people to see that this is real people. This is what they know. And because right now, people just don't get it. The other point that I think is the bigger point is that the phone in your pocket, we all have a phone on us right now, all of us, everyone in this building and everyone in the world. And Google is tracking everywhere you go. Facebook is tracking everywhere you go. The carrier is tracking and selling that information everywhere you go. Many of the apps on your phone are doing it, most of them sending it to Foursquare. How secure is that communications medium? The point is that it's not just somebody is tracking. Lots of people are tracking you, and we have no access or knowledge about how secure it is, how hackable it is, whether the Chinese government is tracking, is tapping into this information, whether it's being sold, whether it's not being sold. What I do know is that it's all for the purpose of commerce and advertising, and the advertising still sucks. It's not accurate in terms of...
Nobody's getting any benefit from it is what you're saying. Yeah. So it would be okay if somebody were making money on this.
Or they were showing me products I wanted to buy. Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah, if I were getting some benefit.
Yeah, because that's the common defense is like, then you're able to have ads that people actually want to see, which I don't think anybody is thinking, wow, my ads are great now. I'm so happy that I'm seeing so many relevant ads.
Google could do this if they, for instance, if Niantic turned on in Pokemon Go or Ingress, turned on a map that showed you all the other players and where they are in the city. And it would be such an eye-opener. I think these companies know very, very well, and maybe Dens does, maybe that's his reason for doing this, that there would be a hue and cry. Right now, nobody but the geeks at South By and the few people listening to the show know about it and read your Wired piece. But that's not the massive general population. I think if the general population, I think if Elizabeth Warren saw this, and she'd flip her lid.
Probably,
and I could give you a nightmare scenario, Patrick. So it's anonymized, right? It's just an ID. It's not. So I'm a Russian spy, and I want to keep track of an NSA agent. I just hang out in a bar until that agent that I want to keep track of, because I have his picture, shows up, and then I can start tracking his hyper-trending presence on Foursquare. Maybe it's not public. Maybe I have to buy the service. And I can pretty quickly triangulate, oh, that's him. Once I've got his ID, I no longer have to surveil the guy. I know where he is at every moment of every day.
That's exactly right.
I know who his girlfriend is. I know when he's at the office.
I mean, hyper-trending isn't that specific thing, but
yeah,
I think
it is. It is. If it were public, it is, because all you have to do, as you pointed out, you can de-anonymize it by figuring out who's that guy that's going to all these bars.
If you
can do it at scale with AI.
Say something that was individual, where you had an individual, like the game that Dennis showed me, the Monopoly game.
Okay, yes, you're right. Because hyper-trending is just a blog, right?
It's not more of like it's like blocks.
Right.
Hyper-trending shows you essentially a list of stores or restaurants, places of business, and tells you how many people are there
at
that specific moment.
So it's a lie. It's not in Dennis who says, yeah, I know this is controversial, that's why we're showing everybody. That's a lie. Because if they show them the lollipop game, and what they really know, people would freak the hell out.
Well, just like the God mode from Uber.
Exactly.
That data didn't disappear. It's just that that interface was hopefully made forbidden. And no one has access to it except a few very authorized people. But the fact that hypertrending exists or not doesn't change the fact that all of them, you know, location
info.
Data exists. Yeah. And it has
as anonymous as you claim to make it, it can be de-anonymized. I do have to point out that both Apple and Google claim they use a technique to deeply anonymize it, which is not to take the full trip but a segment of the trip, so they don't have a starting point and an ending point. They make some, I think, better efforts. And there are claims that you can supposedly mathematically prove that this stuff is anonymous.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like Foursquare is making any attempt to do that at all.
Every That's company true. Trusts themselves, and their message to the public is, hey, trust us. We're Google, Apple, Foursquare, et cetera, et cetera. We're AT&T. We're this company. We're that company. Trust us. We will keep your data secure. We won't be hacked. We won't share it. We won't de-anonymize it. None of that stuff is going to happen. Of course, all those things happen all the time. And it's just it's something that everybody needs to be much more aware of. And I think that, you know, we need help from all quarters. We need phones that are that can turn off location by default quickly, more conveniently, more transparently, and a whole bunch of other things. Because right now it's getting to the point. And again, I'm kind of amazed at this conversation because this is almost exactly the conversation we're going to have about Facebook.
Yeah.
There are many points, and we're gonna do.
It's actually a good table setter for the Facebook conversation.
Exactly.
Paris, when you interviewed Dennis, what was the sense you got from him? Was he proud of this? Did he understand how upset people would be if they knew that he had this lollipop game?
He was speaking about it like it was the most normal thing in the world, and I think at one point later in our conversation, I was like, "This is honestly very surprising to me," because I mean, I'm a tech reporter. I follow these spaces pretty thoroughly and regularly, and it didn't seem obvious to me or my editor, even when we were talking about this conversation to begin with, that this sort of granular level of data was something that Foursquare had and was playing with on a regular basis. And I think he replied something to the effect of, "Oh yeah, this happens to us all the time. We don't realize how." I guess not callous or how blasé we are towards things that anybody outside of our company would be like, oh my God, wow, you have this sort of information. I think he said that he often, whenever he has conversations with like his mom or sister or family members and mentions some of the things that they do, he gets shocked back into, stepped back into reality.
This is why these people should not be allowed to decide what this stuff, because they're completely immune to it.
It's why
Uber didn't realize how horrific God mode was. I mean, they're so callous about this that they should not be allowed to make decisions.
Foursquare even has a, it's like a tech ethicist panel. Like they have a group of, thinkers in the space who they've hired anytime somebody says, oh, this might be a controversial subject.
Yeah, but they work
put
for
it to this panel. And I mean,
but to what Mike was saying, how do we address this? You were saying we need an easy way to manage location services. On the iPhone, at least, I'm guessing it's the same case on Android phones. It's very easy to go in and disable location services as a whole or per application.
But the minute you open your map, it starts sending data back to Foursquare. The minute
not if you disable it for the application,
because it doesn't know where you are.
Exactly. So that's the point.
So people should stop using weather apps, map apps. I mean, so many apps know your location. Stop using Yelp. Even if you only send location when the app is running, which is probably the right default setting for all of these. You're sending out enough information that it could be. I think the real issue here is there are so many signals that somebody with the desire to combine signals is going to get a very complete map. So really, the only way is just to not carry a smartphone. But are people willing to do that?
I think that the idea of consent like consent in these cases is an illusion when it's just a binary choice when it comes to our sort of privacy settings,
right.
Whether it's, if it's, you get this feature or you get access to Facebook and the things that you need to be a person in the world, unfortunately nowadays, or you don't, if you want to not send all of your information out. And even in the cases of, okay, let's say you turn off location services for one thing and you only use it for 1 second to order your Uber, you're still sending out just more. You, when we think of location services, maybe we think of you're sending out one signal, but no, your phone is sending out, here are the 10 Bluetooth signals I'm picking up next to me. Here are all the Wi-Fi networks that I can read. They're using GPS, GSM, and all of that's going to Foursquare or Google or whoever, who is then going to check that against their range of locations to be like, oh, Paris is at World Trade Center. I'm going to send her Uber there.
Just to flesh out Patrick was saying, the situation with user control of location data apps is getting better. And I know on Android, it's constantly saying, hey, this this app is using your location. Is that okay? And you can just right there choose
iOS
yes or no.
iOS does that, not right. Android. Does Android, do that?
Android does that too. Oh, okay. So they both do it. They both made improvements. But the problem is that, like you mentioned Uber, the way it really should work is at the point when you're ready to order an Uber, you should have an explicit option to turn on location for Uber, the Uber app, and say, okay, I'm going to turn this on until my car comes and then it goes off automatically or something like that. That would be the user advocacy default. But it's actually the industry advocacy default, which is that the Uber is tracking you all the time.
And you have to actively say no.
And you have to.
But in addition to that, you should be able to say, okay, if I want to share my data and location data for that one moment to Uber, I can only consent to it being used for things relating
that's
to my
key.
Uber ride.
There you go, bingo.
And that it can't be used for any other services, or it can't be shared with advertisers. It can't be used to be
don't
a hyper-trending map.
Don't put the burden on the user. Put the burden on these companies not to aggregate and share this data, because that's what's wrong.
Yeah. Why is it sent to Foursquare in the first place, I guess, is a good question. So do we need legislation? That's where I'm going to lose all of you. Oh, yes. Okay. Excellent.
Yeah,
socialism.
I think so.
It's the only solution, because they're not going to self-regulate. And all you have to ask is, if an adversary got access to this information, would that be a bad thing? If the Chinese government were able to get access to this Foursquare information, would that be a bad thing? And if you say yes to that, then we've got to do something about it, because there's no way that an adversary is not actively trying to get all this information.
There's no way that they don't already have
it. And they probably have it.
The issue is that you can't really close the doors on data. There's no expiration date for your consent when it comes to the sort of data that you're handing over. Let's say, okay, Foursquare allows like Uber and some other third parties that it works with. All it takes is one of those third parties breaking their contract with Foursquare and sharing that data with somebody else who decides to pay them $1 million for the data they have, and then that person shares it with someone else, and so on and so forth.
Who knows? Maybe there's some Chinese shell company posing as, I don't know, American massage parlor entrepreneur that is buying this data already from Foursquare and from Google. It's for legitimate advertising.
You'd have to hope that when Uber or an app sends the data to Foursquare, it's maybe somewhat identifiable, but then Foursquare actually anonymizes it, and you can't really be found afterwards. I mean, we don't know that for sure, but I would guess that's what they do. They have some kind of process so that you don't actually have your ID number that can be easily attached to you, I would guess.
But to Leo's point, it's easily discernible to figure out who people
are. You could de-anonymize this.
Right, and everything's ultimately associated with a phone number. And the phone number is gold, and you can figure out everything. This is like remember the conversations we used to have about the NSA spying? And they're like, oh, it's just metadata. A metadata tells you everything.
Yeah, we now know.
Yeah. And this is like metadata. Even if it's anonymized, it's all the contextual data. Well, who is it that spends their days at this company and lives in this neighborhood and drops off their child at this daycare center and frequently goes to this other person's house? You can figure out who that is. And even if you don't know who it is by name, you know everything else about that person. It's enough information to do anything you want to do. It's also, I mean, everything's a mixed bag in technology, right? So this knowledge about how many people are in the building in the cafeteria downstairs, that's really valuable knowledge for firefighters, for example. Oh, or for,
in
first
all sorts
responders.
Of beneficial ways you
Absolutely.
Can think of it. Yeah.
Right. So it's
even for you, you may not want to go because it's too busy.
To fast forward to what I think.
Yeah, there's the thing on Google Maps that shows you,
best
it's going
to
be more
go.
Busy around 10 p.m. Yeah.
Right.
And that's
but
the exact same technology.
I have to think that Sundar Pichai or Larry Page is going, Dennis, you nitwit, you don't tell people this stuff.
That's right.
Keep it a secret. We're not going to put location. It reminded me, and this is going to be obscure to anybody over a certain age, but it reminded me of the Marauder's map in Harry Potter. Paris knows what I'm talking about. Where you it was a map, and if you take your wand, you go, I solemnly swear I'm up to no good, and you tap it, all of a sudden it comes alive and shows the location of everybody in Hogwarts. You know, as they walk around. It was hugely valuable to Harry and his team. It's good. Go watch the movie, kids. It's fantastic. Anyway. no, I'm
definitely
just
a privacy violation.
Or read the book. Read the book, maybe.
I was just teasing. Obviously, read the book. It's like that. But what if Pokemon Go suddenly, I solemnly swear, I'm up to no good. You tapped it and you could see every Pokemon player or anybody who had installed it ever in their location. It would immediately come home to the American public. That's the big oh shoot moment.
Yeah, I guess we know that Facebook and Google have profiles like these with that amount of sensitive data.
Yeah, we know in the back of our mind.
We didn't know that. Yeah, but at least we know. I don't think any of us knew that Foursquare had a profile with that much of that much personal and
here's my
sensitive
suspicion,
data. Right,
that there are many more big data brokers that we don't even know their name. I bet Paris knows some of them that are doing that have exactly the same information. The real fear is that somebody goes out and buys three or four of these databases in real time and gets a real time fire hose of them, because that now suddenly you've got this amazingly granular map of pretty much everybody. Yeah. I don't think it should be on us as users not to have a smartphone or make sure we turn off privacy. I think it should be illegal to collect certain kinds of information and sell it and share it.
Here's what I think the theme of this show will be at the end of the show.
Yeah.
I think the theme will be that clearly our laws don't reflect the 21st century.
No.
And we need a tech new deal. You heard it here first, folks.
Is it green?
No. Yeah, that's another new deal. This is an even newer deal. We need to update our laws around antitrust, around privacy. I mean, back in the day, back in the 20th century, where all of our current laws were written, basically, we had laws sort of like public television had to have a certain number of hours of XYZ because they were using the public's resource, the airwaves, right? There was this idea that nobody was like, oh my God, overregulation.
Right.
Who owns the data about where you are? Does Foursquare? I mean, they're acting like they own it.
Yeah. You gave it to them.
That's right. Fair so maybe we need laws that say, okay, here's who owns that information.
I confess I've been a bad boy for years. I've argued, oh, who cares? Let them have my data. You know, there's so much value in this, I don't care if Google knows where I am. And that's why I think it's important. I think what actually Dennis did, and maybe he knew what he was doing, what Dennis actually did is kind of bring it home to some people. And I think if somebody made a map that was like this Marauder's map, but it showed everybody in your town and where they were, there would be instant regulation. Instantly. I think there's no question about it. People would hop. They'd be so mad.
I think you have a lot of faith in the public.
Oh, I think if they saw it, they'd freak out. Wouldn't you freak out if there were an app on your phone? Somebody should do this.
I mean, that's the Snap map, but you have to agree to it.
And it's only people using Snapchat, right?
Yeah, people who
it's
use
it's only your friends.
On there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
but
that's
I mean,
not so bad. I don't.
That.
It's okay if Leo knows where his friends are. What's so bad about that? But what if every one of us knew where every single... What if there were a Petaluma app that showed you where every single resident of Petaluma was at every given time?
But Leo, you keep saying that. The fact that this data exists somewhere doesn't mean that people are doing it. It's like that Marauder's map. It's essentially the Uber God mode, right?
Yeah.
Someone did it indeed, and very quickly they were shut down. I would hope that if someone was using the data
shut down,
in the same way,
they were told not to use it. I doubt very much it doesn't exist.
But because, no, of course. But it exists everywhere. It exists everywhere.
Yeah.
I guess what we come back to is we need regulation for these types of data, as, you know, well, everyone was arguing. That, I think, is the possibly the conclusion of this conversation. It's so much and such important data. It needs to be regulated, and currently it is not regulated at all.
I think that's the final word. We all agree, so say we all. All right. I mean, I hate to say we got to regulate it, especially because we have such a dysfunctional government that I, you know, I
don't. Don't say
we've had this argument before, Patrick.
Yes, we have. And what happens when you say stuff like that is put into people's head this idea that government can't function to do what it's supposed to do, while at the same time saying, but we need to it to be regulated. Of course, government is not going to be perfect. And of course, there are going to be some things that are not it's not understanding and something it doesn't do properly. And maybe even the laws that it would pass would not would be imperfect in many ways. But if you say if you follow up the idea that it should be regulated by the caveat, oh, but the government can't really do it, then obviously nothing's going to happen.
You're right. I shouldn't come from despair. I should come from hope.
Or a mix of both.
Bill Clinton. Still believe in a place called hope.
I believe in a place called hope. I want to live there with my girlfriend and Hillary. We're going to take a little break after that. I should just edit that part out, would you? Because that was tasteless. we shall continue. I mean, this is just, this wasn't even good. This was going to be the amuse-bouche before we got to the main course.
That's right.
It's going to be a long main course.
It's going to be a big main course because we still have to talk about
meal.
And it is related. Facebook saying, no, privacy first. And Elizabeth Warren saying, I got a solution. Don't regulate them. Just break the hell, break them all up.
After we talk about Facebook, we're all going to wish Foursquare had all control of all the data.
There's a lot more. And there's, I mean, 100 other stories, too. We'll try to get to as many of them as we can. But as always, it's the big stories that interest us the most. Patrick Béja is here representing the EU.
EU perspective.
I speak for all of us.
All of the EU. He is Frenchspin.com. It's always a pleasure. Actually, I really do like having you on, Patrick, because we often, especially on Twit, but in general, all Americans kind of have a U.S.-centric point of view. And the EU has really been in the forefront, especially in these kinds of privacy regulations. So it's good to have you arguing for the sanctity of government.
with a perfect example of what I was saying, which is the laws might be necessary, but they're not perfect and highly...
Yeah. I think I'd rather see a GDPR for the U.S. Than a breakup of Amazon, Google, Apple.
Well, we're getting one for California.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. I'm sorry. No, I have hope. I believe. Paris Martineau's here. She is staff writer at Wired. I didn't realize you were in New York. I'm glad you you're joining us all the way from far, far away. Good day.
I am. I'm 29 floors up right now.
Wow. Really nice. Are you in is it the Condé Nast building?
Yeah, it's Condé Nast. It's in World Trade Center.
Oh, wow. That's a good location.
Yeah, I'm surprised you can kind of see out the windows back here.
Yeah.
It's incredibly foggy and you cannot see basically the entire building is gone.
So
if you look
you're on floor 29. Don't ever say gone in World Trade Center in the same sense. You're on floor 29 of one World Trade Center, which goes how many floors up?
Oh, I honestly have no idea.
There are
quite a few floors.
Like 100
I know that the 100 at the very least, I think. Yeah. I know we have a coffee shop on the 64th and that's barely in the middle, so probably quite a bit.
Wow. That is that's amazing.
We need buildings like that in San Francisco.
It's a really cool building. Yeah. and Mike Elgin is here. World traveler.
He
most recently was in where?
Morocco. And next week we're going to Mexico City to do the Mexico City
experience. What a life.
And then back to Morocco for the Morocco experience. And
Gastronomad.net if you want to find out what Mike's up to with that. And in fact, if you go to gastronomad.net and click the experiences button, you can see upcoming gastronomatic experiences. And there's
last year, before the Provence experience, I did the show and I said, I want to twit Army fan to join
nice.
Us. And somebody joined us from Twit Army.
Nice.
And I want to do that again for Mexico City. We got a room for you.
These are small groups.
Yeah, small.
You all live in the same building. You guys, you and Amira, your beautiful wife, go to a place, find all the greatest chefs and interesting gastronomic experiences, find a wonderful place to stay, and you all stay together. You have dinners together. You get plenty of time to tour as well.
We make stuff. Like in Mexico, we make tacos, we make bread, we make all this stuff, chocolate from scratch.
So fun.
We plant the seed and wait for it to grow, and then we make the chocolate.
So fun. And is your Mexico City location near the Zocalo? Is that?
It is literally on the Zocalo.
Oh, that's so cool.
We have a view of the... I think that's a surprise. My wife's going to kill me.
Shh.
We keep all these things surprises.
It's a good location.
It's a great location.
Very central, shall we say.
Yes.
Look at that. Oh, man.
Yeah.
And then next, Morocco. That's in Fez.
That's a two-week experience. We're doing the whole country.
Oh, nice.
2 weeks. Yeah, yeah. And so, it's going to be fantastic.
This is a nice little side kind of gig for you.
I'm along for the ride. I mean, my wife does all the work. She literally spends months at every location putting these things
together.
And
Amira's one of the best cooks I've ever, just amazing.
She really is.
But you also bring in local chefs, and I know you've had bread makers and so forth.
Yep, yeah.
Then Prosecco Italy, and then Provence, and you're going to do Barcelona again, and... This is cool.
Yeah, we keep adding them because for the Prosecco experience, it filled up just immediately. So we added two more.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, so we're doing three this year.
You'll also see Mike's writing in Computer World and...
Fast Company.
Fast Company and not much on Google Plus anymore.
Not really. I did a final...
did you do a farewell?
I did on Fast Company.
Yeah.
I think it was a eulogy for the last great social network. That was the headline.
Well, and in a way, and we'll talk about it, I think what Mark's proposing sounds a little bit like Google Plus.
I'll tell you what it sounds... Well, okay.
We'll get to that next.
We'll save it.
All right. But first, a word from Wasabi. Wasabi is hot. Cloud storage. Hot, that is. You know, cloud storage is on a roll. This is a huge category. Almost all businesses are at this point considering some move to the cloud of data. It's estimated in the next 6 years, by 2025, there'll be 163 zettabytes of data in the cloud. That's 163 followed by 21 zeros. That's a lot of data. And choosing a cloud provider is a really, really big deal. Cloud data, if done right, is probably more secure than your on-premises storage. It can save you money. It's more robust, more reliable, but it has to be done right. And that's why I'm really glad to talk about Wasabi. It was started by my friend David Friend, who was the founder of Carbonite, along with his CTO, Jeff Flowers. They came up at Carbonite with a patented method for writing to hard drives. It lays the data on the disk sequentially, not via blocks, and that makes it faster and more efficient, which means it's also less expensive. And that's the technology, that patented technology that Wasabi is using to store efficiently and affordably the data your business wants to save up in the cloud. This is disruptive technology, but they got to get the word out. And I said, I will help you because I am such a believer in this. I know it's the big three. You get all the attention, and probably if you're putting together a cloud strategy for your company, of course you're thinking Amazon, Google, Microsoft. But what if I tell you that Wasabi is 80% cheaper and 6 times faster than Amazon's S3? It uses the S3 API, so you already know how to use it. All your software already knows how to use it, but it's 80% cheaper and 6 times the speed. And it's very simple. The pricing couldn't be more simple. There's just one tier of service. And unlike the other guys, they don't charge you for egress. You get free, unlimited egress. So that really helps your budgeting and planning because you don't even think about it. It's just how much are we going to put up there? That's all you think about. They have a form of data that is, I think, super vital. I love this idea. It's called immutable storage. You can designate some of your cloud storage unchangeable, not by malware, not by a ransomware, not by a fumble-fingered employee. That data is protected. You have to jump through hoops to write to it. And that's huge. I think that's brilliant. It's just as secure because of that and of course, all the things they're doing than on-premises storage. I would say it's more secure in most cases. It's HIPAA compliant, FINRA compliant, CJIS compliant. And if you have a lot of data to start, you want to migrate to petabytes of data, you can do that with the Wasabi Ball, which is a really cool technology, a physical drive. You copy the data too, send it to Wasabi, it's up in the cloud. Experience Wasabi for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. That's better than the normal deal. You're going in through a special Wasabi.com trial offer. Use the offer code TWIT to turn that terabyte of storage to an unlimited amount so you can really bang on it. Upload everything. Wasabi.com. W-A-S-A-B-I.com. Don't forget to use the offer code TWIT. All right. I think we need to go to Facebook now. I maybe got a little over-optimistic when I read this, and I read it on Wednesday. Mark Zuckerberg's more than 3,000-word post, a privacy-focused vision for social networking. I got so excited by this. Whoops.
You had hope, Leo.
I actually...
First mistake of reading a Mark Zuckerberg 3,000-word
I know. I fell for it. I had deactivated my Facebook account back in August. I reactivated it, and I said I posted for the first time in
Leo.
6 months saying,
no.
Wait a minute. Now, let me justify this, saying, look, I don't know if Mark's sincere, but if he is, this is the social network I want, and I'm gonna stay on Facebook to find out. Now, the minute he proves to be insincere about this, I will be gone again because anybody who uses Facebook, and incidentally, that number is dwindling. We've just saw a statistic that said the number of posts on Facebook is down 25%. Number of people using Facebook under the age of 25 has dwindled by millions. Millions of people are leaving the platform. Facebook is under investigation by Congress, by Parliament in the UK. We keep hearing every week more horrific security stories. Last week, in fact, coincident with this announcement, it came out that Facebook was using the number, your phone number, that they asked for two-factor authentication as a way of identifying you, and that there was searchable and there was no way to turn that off.
And they're making it available to advertisers.
And they sell ads against it, even though they were saying, oh, it's just two-factor. Time and time again. I mean, there's been no evidence that Facebook or Mark Zuckerberg cares the least for our privacy or security. It seems to be, or our laws, the only thing Facebook cares about is making more money. Then Mark writes this post, and I want to give people the benefit of the doubt. So you guys, let me just say what Mark said. Then you guys can talk me off. I was off the ledge. Talk me back
onto
the ledge.
Get you back up on that ledge.
Talk me back onto the ledge. My focus, Mark, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to synopsize. My focus for the last couple of years has been understanding and addressing the biggest challenges facing Facebook. In fact, he said that was going to be his challenge for this year.
He used to only eat food that he killed. Now
he's
this.
Saying, he says, I'm going to outline our vision and principles around building a privacy-focused message. Now, this is important. Messaging and social networking platform. Essentially, I saw this as a pivot. Now, you know, I've read a lot since I read this, but I think it's still, if you read it at face value, if you give Mark credit for being sincere, it still is a pivot. He's saying public social networks will continue to be very important in people's lives. People find these valuable every day. There are a lot of services to build on them. But now, with all the ways people also want to interact privately, there's an opportunity to build a simpler platform that's focused on privacy first. And that's why I say it's a pivot. Facebook right now is public. And your stuff leaks out of it, even if you say it's private. He says, I understand many people don't think Facebook can or would even want to build this kind of privacy-focused platform because, frankly, we don't have a strong reputation for that. And we've focused on tools for more open sharing. But I believe the future of communication will increasingly shift to private, encrypted. Whoa, when I saw that, I went, what? Services. And when he says encrypted, he says, I want to do end-to-end encryption. We won't even be able to read your transactions. So here's the principles. Private interactions. People should have simple, intimate places where they have clear control over who can communicate with them. I read that to be advertisers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And confidence that no one else can access what they share, even Facebook. People's communication should be encrypted. End-to-end prevents anyone, including us, from seeing what people share on our services. Here's another one. This has come straight from the Snapchat playbook. Reducing permanence. One of the problems with Facebook and the web in general is everything posted there lives forever. You just said it yourself, Mike. People should be comfortable being themselves and should not have to worry about what they share coming back to hurt them later. In fact, many psychologists and others, social scientists, have observed that it's really important, especially for young people, is the ability to try personas and then leave them behind. Mm-hmm. And that's why young people love Snapchat. They can try stuff on, but it doesn't haunt them for the rest of their life. So he says, we won't keep messages or stories around for longer than necessary to deliver the service or longer than people want them. That's Snapchat, right?
Yep.
Safety. People should expect we'll do everything we can to keep them safe on our limits. And this is really interesting. Within the limits of what's possible in an encrypted service, he's tacitly acknowledging that if we can't see the messages
right.
that are being sent, people could bully you. But presumably, they're going to give you strong controls that allow you to say, I don't want to hear from that person ever again. Interoperability. This is a controversial one, and it's not clear what he means. People should be able to use any of our apps.
Right.
So that means Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp to reach their friends. But then this is the sentence that I'm not sure what he means. They should be able to communicate across networks. Does that mean just within the Facebook network?
Yes.
He actually had an announcement about this.
He's mentioning text messages as well, which could open the door to other things.
Okay.
Obviously, he's not specifically naming other companies, but the fact that he's saying it could be used via SMS as well could arguably...
And then finally, and this was another one that was a big deal, I thought, secure data storage. People should expect we won't store sensitive data in countries with weak records on human rights. Now, we already know Facebook doesn't operate in China. China won't let it.
Right.
But it does, it's a little shot across Tim Cook's bow saying, we're not going to, Apple stores your data in China with the keys.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that. It means there's no way they could operate in China. Now, I love this, and if and I obviously this is a turning your back on a significant amount of revenue, the ad revenue that Facebook gets. I think there are opportunities. Here's what I interpret this, and I'm not alone in this. It seems to me Facebook's looking at WeChat in China, Line in Japan. Those are messaging platforms that have turned into really platforms for almost every kind of interaction, including financial transactions, purchasing of plane tickets, socializing. And the idea that I could control who could talk to me, this is like Google Plus, this is what I like in the Google Plus, who could talk to me, who I would hear from. If a brand wanted to talk to me, they wouldn't get to unless I give them permission, mm-hmm. permission which could be revoked at any time. I love this notion. I think this is exactly what people want for a social network. And what they thought Facebook was, I will decide who gets to see my posts. And it's going to be my family and friends. It's not going to be advertisers. It's not going to be Russia. I think this is what people thought they were getting with Facebook. I think this, here was my initial theory. Talk me up onto the ledge again. I thought Mark was seeing the horror of what he'd created, maybe just because of the personal risk that he's facing from regulation, breakup, maybe going to jail, I don't know, and saying, all right, you don't like it, I got a new idea. And an idea, I think, Facebook is looking at Line and WeChat and saying, you know, they're doing pretty well. In fact, one of the reasons Facebook never had a chance in China is because of WeChat.
Mm-hmm.
I think, honestly, that this is if I were Mark Zuckerberg, I would like this plan. All right, I'm done.
I'm with you, actually, Leo. I'm actually with you. I think this is momentous. Now, if we take it as at face value, I think it's very easy to go, oh, of course, he has never, been truthful or trustworthy with any of his declarations before. So why would we trust him now? Sure, I don't think we should trust him just on this, but I think it has value. I don't think he can say all of these things and then do nothing. And the list, as you remarked, is essentially the dream of any anti-Facebook person. This is the perfect social network he's describing.
Except for law enforcement. They're going to hate this.
Well, except for data collection and tracking.
And Foursquare.
Except for people who...
All of his customers are going to hate it, but his users are going to love it.
He even says we will work with law enforcement to do whatever we can do to help them do their job.
So yeah, but honestly, if I were Facebook, and I know Apple wants to do this, I would just make it encrypted and say, hey, I'm sorry, but we can't.
Yeah, but there's metadata. There's patterns.
Yeah,
there
then how are you supposed to do. Moderate things?
You can't. He said it. You can't.
I know. I mean, then we're going to have the same issue that we have with WhatsApp in the sense that
you moderate it
can spread rapidly.
Yeah. You decide.
And then when something happens exactly in the same case as WhatsApp in India in regards to Myanmar and fake news bringing about death on such a massive scale. What are we supposed to do then? Happens, allow it to spread?
Well, Myanmar's a little different.
Anyway.
Myanmar was, they were able to use the very public platform of Facebook to say, wipe out the Rohingya.
Okay, well, let's talk about
But WhatsApp is a good example because that WhatsApp is an encrypted.
And that is part of Facebook.
One-to-one messaging with group messaging. It was used to cause people's deaths, mass rapes. It was a very, very bad thing.
Child pornography is big on
using WhatsApp. Fake news. And you're right, that's a huge problem.
They have limited the sizes of groups and things like that, which doesn't solve everything. But it's not like bad
I think
things
that's
happen
easier
on Facebook,
to solve.
Facebook, right?
That's easier to solve than the Myanmar issue and the Cambridge Analytica issue, which are much more intractable issues. If you continue to run a public network, that's really what do you do about anti-vaxxers? It becomes really, really difficult.
But I think this is akin to what Zuckerberg saw when he saw things moving in the mobile world. And he decided Facebook is going to be a mobile first company and we're going to all focus on this. And he managed in, 2 years to make Facebook primarily a mobile company. I don't know that he's right that everything has to go private. I think that is something a lot of people do want. And I think he has the power and determination to make it happen.
He didn't say everything would go private.
That's a question I have.
Privacy first.
Is some have said, he's going to still have public Facebook. He's just going to do this with WhatsApp or just do this with Messenger.
He's going to connect all the messaging platforms and Facebook together so that you can do end-to-end encryption to and from and within all of them. And he's going to say that's this big privacy thing.
There's still a big public Facebook.
Right, of course. And people are going to want to do whatever they want to do.
That's not how I read it. I really read that
No, me neither.
He clarifies this in his interview he did with Nick later that day on last Wednesday or whatever it was. He, I believe, says here, I'm looking at it, says the thinking is that there needs to be two types of platforms in the world. One is a more public platform, like the digital equivalent of the town square. And then the other platform is a private space.
Living room.
The digital equivalent of a living room. Yeah. And then you're going to have the Facebook and Instagrams and the WhatsApp and Messengers. But they're both there, but they're both kind of separate. And working for different groups and for different reasons.
Leo, can I burn his whole post down?
Burn it to the ground.
And I want you all to join me on this ledge, and we'll jump together holding hands.
Louise. I like it.
Okay, so the way I look at this is he's trying to get credit for everything he's resisted. They wouldn't let him into China because China wants to control the Chinese public through WeChat. WeChat is the Mark Zuckerberg wet dream. You can't scratch your butt in China without WeChat.
Yeah.
You can't ride a train. You can't get a coffee. You can't split
exactly.
a bill. You
can't big opportunity.
Anything. And he's like, that's what I
build
want.
Build a platform.
He wants to make Facebook 10 times more invasive and 10 times more of a monopoly in the whole non-Chinese world than it is today. That's
what
he wants.
He wants to make WeChat. That's what Molly Wood said in Wired.
He wants you using Facebook coin to buy everything through WeChat. He wants everything to happen through WeChat. He wants to know exactly where everyone is at all times, far more information than Foursquare has. He's going to know what you buy, who you buy it for, who you meet with, when you meet.
So there's plenty of opportunity to make money.
He wants to make 10 times more money by being 10 times more of a monopoly. And the way to get there is to say, we're going to be WeChat but with encryption.
Right.
We're going to be the justifiably, morally superior version of WeChat because we're going to have encryption, unlike WeChat, which is, an entirely different thing altogether. What this blog post represents to me is he's basically announced that we got a few more things that we're going to copy the remaining two things from Snapchat that we didn't copy previously. And then we're going to start copying WeChat. We're going to copy everything they do. And by the way, there's three stories a day recently about all the transgressions Facebook has committed.
That's right.
Against everybody. They're harvesting data about women's menstrual cycles. They're harvesting right. data about people's heart rates. They're taking phone. They're requiring you to use a phone for two-factor authentication. Then they're selling your phone number to yeah. advertisers. All these stories are coming like this, and he's like, "We got to distract everybody from this and give them some BS." And so he did this post, and he said, "We're going to change all these things that aren't really the problem." He didn't mention tracking. He didn't mention shadow profiles. He didn't mention harvesting data. He didn't mention any of the things that are truly controversial. He came up with these other things that are less controversial, encrypted communication. He's basically saying you're going to be able to send email from CompuServe to Prodigy. Oh, my God. Like, nobody has ever thought of it before, and it's going to be encrypted. Who cares?
Right.
He doesn't care.
It's not who cares, Mike. You're being disingenuous. It's still a big shift for a company like Facebook.
It's an inevitable shift. He has to offer encrypted communication. Yeah. And yeah. What he wants to do is take all these.
He's making a virtue out of a necessity.
He's got 2 million people on Facebook. He's got a 1.something billion on this and that platform and another platform. He wants to take all four of them and combine them into one super network that's all connected. In China, there are a huge number of Chinese people who never use the actual internet. WeChat is everything online.
That's Facebook's dream all along, by the way, with the internet.org.
He's trying to just convince everybody that it's a virtue for him to control all the users in a closed garden. It's a virtue that he is not allowed to in China, and I think he's going to get kicked out of Russia, too.
And I think he would be happy.
I think he wants all the money. I think he wants the rubles, and he would love to be in China. He tried really hard. He learned Mandarin, for God's sake. And then
speaks it pretty well, too.
Yeah, and it didn't work. And so now he's trying to get credit for saying, oh, we're not going to work with those Chinese, you know, the totalitarian countries anymore. It's a distraction and designed to make you feel comfortable about him becoming WeChat and really controlling everything. That's what I think.
All right, we have polar opposites. Paris is in the middle.
Yeah, I was just even on that note, Mike, it's not even that new of an announcement. What was it at the end of January? Zuckerberg had announced that he was planning on merging Facebook, Messenger, Instagram, and WhatsApp into one large pool that was encrypted, which is essentially the exact same description as what he laid out in this post, albeit with more detail and 3,000 more words. It is the logical business decision because Gen Z and people of that age, they don't go on Facebook. They're probably going to get tired of Instagram by the time they have purchasing power and are going to be moving, already have moved towards private communication as their primary social media platform. And the writing is on the wall, and this is the best financial decision. And he is trying to spin it in a way that sounds appealing to consumers and sounds like a privacy-focused message. Shouldn't and something that will distract people.
Okay, and I acknowledge that could be the case, in which case I'll immediately delete my Facebook account again. Shouldn't we encourage him to do the right thing? You know, he's got the carrot. I mean, he's got the stick beating him. Shouldn't we put a carrot in front of him and say, yeah, Mark, that's it. Keep going that way.
He's trying to bulletproof the company from being broken up. Once everything is connected through these encrypted end-to-end networks between these things, by the time they get around to breaking it up, he's like, oh my God, we can't break it up. It's all so interconnected that it's all one big thing.
It's a platform.
Right.
So I'm not, Paris, you believe that this is a cynical play on Mark's part.
I mean, I just think that if we are talking about privacy, the fundamental issues when it comes to privacy in Facebook is not most of the things from a consumer-facing perspective as a platform. It is the back end, the advertising stuff, the tracking aspects of it, the shadow profiles, as you had mentioned before. It is this whole other separate side of Facebook that Zuckerberg doesn't address in these sort of posts, these sort of things that he is bringing up in his declaration, such as the one last week, is the consumer-facing platform-centric decisions, which are ultimately missing the fundamental parts of this conversation that we're trying to have about privacy in Facebook.
That blog post was right out of today's Washington, D.C. It was right out of Breitbart News or any of the any of the spin control mechanisms that have been cultivated over the decades and now are in full force in Washington D.C. in political speech. He's using them as a big distraction. He's trying to control the message around Facebook because it's gotten out of hand.
Yeah.
And almost everything that Facebook has ever done that could be considered the right thing, they've been forced by bad press to do those things. And it's like all this talk about giving them the benefit of the doubt, we've been giving him the benefit of the doubt for a decade, and he's disappointed us every time. I've never seen anything come out of Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg that was like preemptively doing the right thing because it was the right thing.
But couldn't it be the first time?
No. It's unlikely. It's unlikely.
I mean, there's no doubt that this is at least also going to be making money. I think the reason why he's doing this is not because he's thinking, oh, we have to make humanity better.
No.
And this is how,
right.
You know, he's, I completely believe that he's seeing the writing on the wall and he's thinking this is where this type of tool and platform has to go in order to survive and maybe even grow. But I do think that Mike, and maybe Paris, you're being a little bit harsh. You make it sound like he is some kind of mustache twirling evil, you know, Bond villain who's trying to enact the most amount of damage he can. I think he's looking at the industry and thinking, okay, where are we going? How can I keep my business safe? And where do I make my money? There is, I think, a very little doubt that this is going to be, from a revenue standpoint, from a revenue standpoint, a little bit more challenging to create revenue streams, or he's going to have to switch a few things to keep it working. But it doesn't mean all of this doesn't mean that it can't also have some positive effects, right? Or is it all dark and terrible?
So it's not about mustache. I'd take a mustache twirling villain any day over Mark Zuckerberg because he's.
Wow.
I've given this perspective before. I think it's very clear, and I'm not a psychologist. I just play one on TV. That he's simply is amoral. He's in the same way that he's literally colorblind. I think he's blind to moral issues. I think he just can't tell the difference between right and wrong. Although he does want to be successful. And I think the manifesto that he laid out in this blog post makes it very, very clear in this sort of like a wishy-washy kind of a way that he wants to be WeChat. WeChat is so dominant in China. Like, please, everybody, read up on what it's like to try to live without WeChat in China. You can't get by. 1.1 billion people in China use WeChat. Everybody uses WeChat, and that's what he clearly laid out that he wants to do. He wants these encrypted networks that are private to actually be the way you pay for everything, the way
the primary form of communication.
Yeah, it's your everything. He wants to be bigger than the internet. He wants to personally control something that's bigger than the internet.
It's not a one-to-one comparison. China also controls what can exist in China. There's no competition. WeChat is so big because it's the only thing there is.
Never had any.
I don't think it's
there'd be a lot of competition in the U.S.
But
including Apple's messages.
There would be a competition, but the good old-fashioned network effects is the very thing that makes WeChat untouchable.
Right.
It makes the WeChat absolutely indispensable, and he wants to be that indispensable.
Is it possible this is a jujitsu move? I think that's kind of what you guys are saying, which is Mark, painted into a corner, has decided to use the energy directed at him and redirect it into something that – and Ben Thompson has some good things to say about this. He's saying this is both a good move – for Facebook and a good move for us. He says Facebook's getting its privacy cake and eating it too. Yeah. He says stop expecting companies to act against their interests. Facebook isn't killing their core business. They're doing something that benefits it but is not inherently bad for end users. It's reasonable that a company could be instituting genuinely user-friendly changes like end-to-end encryption, even as it furthers its own self-interests. And then Scott Galloway, who's been a very strong critic of Facebook since he wrote his book, The Four, he says, spoiler alert, Zuck doesn't give a fart about your privacy, never has, never will. When Rohingya Muslims are attacked and a woman's right to choose is at risk because of a Supreme Court, stacked by an illegitimate president elected by Russians who weaponized the big blue button, it's clear Zuck is pretty effing far from a town called privacy. Well written, Scott. Maybe a little bit invective, but so it's a jujitsu. So look, I still want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. There's no harm to saying, okay, Mark, put up or shut up. You got a good idea. We like the idea. Let's see you do it. And then if he doesn't do it, calling him on the carpet, there's no harm in that.
Mm-hmm. But Mike is
but it is a jujitsu move in
it.
The sense that he's got these guys coming at him. Mm-hmm. He goes, hey, ah! And he turns all that energy into, instead of breaking up Facebook or putting him out of business, into, oh, it's the new Facebook.
It doesn't matter if he does what he said he would do in that thing. What he didn't say anything about are the issues that we're all concerned about. He didn't say anything about the tracking. He didn't say anything about the shadow profiles. Like, it's not like
he let us kind of project upon it that it would be safe.
Exactly. Yeah. He didn't say he took these side issues that people aren't really that concerned about, and he said, oh, this is going to be this big pivot. In fact, like, why did you get off Facebook? It's not because you didn't have end-to-end encryption.
No, it's because I didn't trust them
exactly
with my data.
Exactly. And I think this blog post is yet another reason to not trust them. It's dripping with
it's cynical.
It's a sleight of hand.
Yeah.
He's trying to distract everybody from all these stories that are out. Search for Facebook on Google News and look at the last month of scandals that have emerged on Google News.
It's a nightmare.
And see how many of those scandals he even hinted at in the blog
post.
Is zero.
You don't think he had a come to Jesus moment and said, oh my God, I got to fix this.
This is a PR move, pure and simple.
So I think,
and I think that this move is ultimately beneficial because the crisis of moderation that Facebook has been facing for so long, this solves that in a way because they don't have to have any more legions of underpaid moderators. It's encrypted. And perhaps in the case of right now, I believe Australia recently passed laws saying that apps like WhatsApp and things like that are going to have to build back doors in their encryption for law enforcement to get in. India is planning on passing a similar law. And then, okay, law enforcement can get in, but Facebook's hands are completely clean. They don't have to have any more Casey Newton articles about how poorly they're treating their moderators that have to look at pictures of dead people because that's not their issue anymore.
It lets them off the hook, even with the Rohingya, because, well, I can't help it if Myanmar wants to send this. We can't see it. We don't have to moderate it because we can't.
He's trying to get credit for the idea that they won't be able to read your messages, your private messages. But what he's not saying is like, but we will have your phone number. We will know who you're talking to. We'll know when you're talking to them. We know what you buy, how much you spent, who you're hanging out with, everywhere you go, 24/7. And we're going to sell that to advertisers and we're going to monetize the crap out of all of this stuff. Like, he's trying to get credit for essentially a coup. He's trying to really take over the right now. The internet, like, you use this service for paying for things and that service for that. We have a decentralized, still more or less, internet in terms of the full breadth of services.
He
wants to be the sole source of information.
But he's saying, trust me, let me run it. I can get the trains to run on time.
But but everything you're saying he wants to do, he could do it with an open public Facebook.
There's too much criticism in that.
Exactly. Right.
So sure. But it's. If there's criticism of the things that he wants to do, there's still going to be criticism when he tries to become WeChat in 3 years with a end-to-end encrypted private messaging and hopefully parts of
the
social
network.
But then
it will be too late,
Patrick. He wants all
the users.
But
if it has a different name, people probably won't realize that it's Facebook until they're already using it for all of their services. I mean, the number of people who don't realize that Instagram is Facebook is already far too high.
He's bleeding users, and he wants to stop the bleeding while he rearranges everything and makes it so that it's impossible for you to get off Facebook.
And he already got Leo, so he's succeeding.
No, he didn't get me.
I want to
encourage him. I gave him a pat on the head. That's all I did, saying, that's right, Mark, good idea. Keep up the good work. Come back and let's see it happen. And if it doesn't happen, well, I'll just leave. I'm not giving him more data.
I can't believe
I'm
defending Facebook.
I can't
believe
it either, Patrick.
I can't believe I'm doing that, but don't we agree that end-to-end encryption, at the very least, end-to-end encryption is a good thing?
Yeah.
We've been asking for it for everything.
And he wants full credit for this thing that will have three effects. It'll give it, give us private communication, which is the good thing that you're referring to. Number two, it'll make his company unbreakable. And number three, it'll allow him to wash his hands of all the child pornography and terrorism that's going on in his network while he runs off with another $400 billion.
Yeah, you're right.
We can't have it both ways. Either we want end-to-end encryption, and I understand this is a small portion of the whole discussion.
But we already have it. But, Patrick, we have it. We don't Signal and you have it. You have end-to-end encryption.
Right.
Yeah, but not on Facebook. We want what we're saying is the lack of end-to-end encryption is damaging to our privacy. We should have end-to-end encryption everywhere.
Yes, but between different lots and lots of companies interoperating with open standards for end-to-end encryption, not one guy controlling everything you know and knowing everything everyone does.
All right,
that's the problem.
And having both your private messages and a social network having this interoperability to where some fake news that you get in a group WhatsApp message can be shared onto your now private and encrypted Facebook group with 20,000 other people and then spread from there to your Instagram chat that has like 100 other friends all without being able to track it or see it. I think having this sort of giant walled garden will just make things speed up on a level that we are unable to comprehend and would be unable to even visualize if all of it was completely encrypted and we were stuck inside that system.
So we don't want it to be encrypted.
We want everything to be encrypted.
I think you want your private messages. I think we want things to be encrypted, but in their own separate spheres to where not just one person owns the entire pot.
Jack, that's, I think, what we should all want.
So now it's going to be an interesting conversation about what Senator Warren has been saying.
That's
looking
next.
Forward to that one.
But before we do that, I just want to delete my Facebook account here. Hold on a second.
He's literally doing it.
You convinced me. Why should I enable this guy? You want to watch me do it? You don't believe it? I was literally, so it would have deleted everything on March 16th. I was literally 10 days away from it deleting everything. And I thought, I want to give him a chance. I want to give him, is
that
so wrong?
That's a little dopamine kick back in your head.
I just want to give him a chance.
Leave Brittany alone.
Oh, I guess I'm just a fool. I'm just a...
You're just a very kind person. That's the problem.
Fool. You took me... Fool me once, Mark Zuckerberg. Shame on me. Fool me 3,482 times, Mark Zuckerberg. Shame on you. Apparently, they're calling me.
I still have a Facebook account. Alas.
It says we're calling me. Don't call me, Facebook. Go away.
Mike, do you have a Facebook account?
I do, and I've given myself 6 months to quit. So I'm quitting on 4th of July. It's a declaration of independence from Facebook.
Are you really?
Yeah, but until then, every day I'm going to try to convince everyone who follows me about my point of view about Facebook. So I'm like an insurgent on Facebook.
I have to have it for work. I use my
Oh, you guys, you talked me into this, and you're not getting rid of your accounts.
I mean, I understand it's bad, but I have to have it for seeing groups that I use for journalism and report on and being able to like search up trends that I write.
No, of course you have.
There's already too much necessity associated with Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they already know everything anyway.
They know everything about me. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not taking anything. It's more for, you know, the most important one was my wife wanted to have, it says she's married, but when I'm not on Facebook, it doesn't say who she's married to.
Some guy. It's complicated.
And she wanted, you know, that she'd be married to me. Okay, so reason for leaving. I have a privacy concern. Boy, they really don't want you to leave.
Yeah.
Give feedback. Let us know. We can address it. No.
Put a link to the show.
You can always control the information. That you
we can always do it. Deactivating. No, I don't want to deactivate. I want to delete it. Okay, deactivate. Deactivating your account. Watch this, by the way, because pretty soon
it doesn't deactivate Messenger, though. You need to deactivate.
Yeah, you
Messenger
have to deactivate
well.
Now. But I thought I could delete this. How do I delete? Let me go back and delete it. Oh, look, I just reactivated it. What the hell? I didn't even click anything.
Isn't the conventional wisdom that you shouldn't delete it because then somebody else can pose as you easily?
So if you see me on Facebook,
it's not
me. Oh, here it is. Permanently delete your Facebook account and information. To keep message, deactivate. Okay. No, I don't want
to download your information.
No, I don't want any of that crap. Oh, now it wants my password here. We'll just put that in. Thank goodness I have LastPass. I don't have to. Go away. I don't care. Just put the password in there, LastPass. Anyway, I shouldn't be doing this on your precious time. I apologize. I
find this very entertaining, personally.
Love to watch.
Love to watch people doing the one thing you wish you could do, but you can't because it's your job. Yeah. You're permanently going to delete your account once you submit. You have 30 days. That's the problem. They give you that 30 days so that then Mark can put another post up, and I could say, good, it's scheduled for permanent. Did I do anything? No. Okay. Canceled. Confirmed. It used to show me Mike Elgin's picture and say, Mike's going to miss
you. Gonna cry.
It did. It used to say
Facebook.
If you want to cancel the
deletion. There's a picture of Mike with tears in his eyes.
Okay. Log out. I am no longer there. If you see my name on Facebook, it's somebody else. I long ago deleted my Instagram. And
your profile? Congratulations, Leo. Your profile is now a shadow profile.
You know, the funny thing? Yeah, right. Following me everywhere, but silently without shadow my knowledge. I actually put Facebook on my phone and Twitter, too. And then, like, last night I was looking at it and said, this is crap. And I deleted it anyway because I don't want to see it. I just wanted to give Mark a little signal. But, Mark, I'm on to you. You little son of a gun. You thought you fooled me, didn't you? Our show today brought to you by WordPress. If you are on the internet, even if you have a Facebook account, you really need to have a website. You need to have a place that you own, that you call your own, that you could put the best things about. In a way, I think the web is really the secret, the antidote to Facebook, the free, the open web. And where I hang my hat, WordPress.com. My site, LeoLaporte.com, is based on WordPress.com. In fact, I've been a WordPress.com subscriber for 12 years. I actually jumped on WordPress the minute it came out when Matt Mullenweg wrote it the first time. I was looking for a better blogging platform. WordPress is it. In fact, it's so successful. One third of all the internet worldwide runs on WordPress. One third. WordPress.com makes it easy. I was hosting my own, doing all the work. I was realizing that I'm paying more than I would for a WordPress site and doing 10 times the work. So I moved to WordPress.com. It's got great site building tools that let you make a unique site that's your own. You don't have to be a web expert. No, you just have to put content up there. Choose a theme. There's thousands of them. If you have any questions, there's great support from real experts, not just some customer service rep, but real experts 24/7. WordPress.com lets anyone pursue whatever it is they love by launching a site that's free to start with room to grow. And you can upload anything, pictures, images, video, text. It's all yours, and you can download it anytime. It's your site. You own it. That's so important. And if you're a business and you don't have a website, I don't even know how you can do business that way. No two-week trials, no hidden fees. WordPress users own their own content forever, and it's built to grow with you. In fact, as I've grown, I've went to the business plan, and I just love it. Great customer support team. WordPress is so powerful and flexible that many of the biggest companies on earth use it for their websites. Fortune.com, Quartz.com. Millions of people use WordPress.com every day to turn their dreams into reality. Build your presence on the net and own it at WordPress.com/twit. 15% off any new plan purchase, WordPress.com/twit. And I have to say, that's what I do when I have the urge to post something on Facebook. I want to post it publicly. I just post it on my blog. If you want to know what I'm up to, that's where I'll post my pictures. We're going to Hawaii in a month. That's where I'll post a picture. I think that's a better place to do it anyway. WordPress.com/twit. 33% of the net runs on WordPress. Find out why. WordPress.com/twit. I love this story. Nellie Bowles writing in the New York Times style section. Because, of course, no woman could write for the news section.
Same thing with the cut in New York Mag, right? Yeah, Rebecca Traister is always incredible politics writer, always in the cut.
The cut is great. And you know
cut
what?
Cut is fantastic.
Yeah. So I'm just going to read that. That's not the ghetto. Mm-hmm. That's downtown. Anyway, thousands of millionaires are about to eat San Francisco alive because you're going to see this year probably Uber, Lyft, Airbnb, and Pinterest all go public. They estimate about 10,000 new millionaires in the 7 square mile district that is San Francisco.
That's incredible.
10,000. And already real estate developers are drooling. She goes to a presentation by a real estate specialist saying, he asked the crowd, are we going to see a one-bedroom condo that's worth less than $1 million in 5 years?
No.
Are we going to see single-family homes selling for $1 to $3 million?
Yes.
The energy rose as he revealed more data about new millionaires and just how few new units have been built for them. San Francisco's single-family home sale prices could climb to an average of $5 million. All cash. It's just going to be astounding, he said. And it makes me so sad for my little city by the bay, which used to be a cultural mecca, a place of diversity, and it was interesting. Now the diversity is either the very rich or the homeless.
What about what happened to hope? I thought we were going to have hope on this.
No show. Hope. There's no hope.
Why don't we
tax? You talked me out of hope.
Hope is
tax
gone.
The crap out of these new millionaires and house the homeless. How about that? That's there's
didn't
an
idea. Seattle. Seattle was going to do that, and they decided not.
They were going to build a park that had like food growing, and I think it was controversial because in America,
Seattle was going to put a head tax on the employees. Of
right.
These
that's
big companies.
Right.
Amazon
that's
had it.
Right.
And, the city council approved it. And then they chickened out.
You'd think Amazon would want something like that so its factory employees would have a place to sleep.
San Francisco tried to tax the large tech giants just a little bit in order to have that tax go to the homeless in the city. And Twitter
and
a bunch of other tech companies came out in full force against it.
It was on the ballot. And you had all these big rich companies say, oh, you can't do that. Tax us?
You mean the companies that control the secret algorithms that control what everybody reads? Yeah. Those companies were against it?
Yeah.
That's not a problem.
At least 10,000 millionaires, and it's sad. I mean, San Francisco is just already, it's kind of unrecognizable when I go there. It's not the city that I used to live
in. They should come to Paris. Paris is much better and much more fun than San Francisco is going to be once they are all millionaires.
That tax did pass, though.
Oh,
Carson,
Prop C passed. It won with 60%. I knew they put a lot of money against it.
I know Jack did a long Twitter thread about why he was against Prop C.
That's a picture of Mark Benioff of Salesforce, who supported it, by the way, to his credit. So it did pass. $300 million a year. But that's all going to go to the homeless. They're going to have a pretty nice homeless shelter downtown.
Yeah, they're going to build a palace for the homeless.
It's if you've been to San Francisco lately, it's difficult to go there.
The RSA party. When I left, I walked to Caltrain.
There's tents. There's
it was unbelievable.
There's porta potties because they're pooping in the streets.
It was incredible.
It's
really bad.
There's a huge.
I will say, I mean, one of the main reasons, though, also when I took this job at Wired, I could have gone to San Francisco or stayed here in New York, and I was like, there's no way that I can afford to live in San Francisco or anywhere remotely close to it. I mean, not that New York is inexpensive, but it's just going to get worse.
That's saying something. It's less expensive to stay in Manhattan than it is to
everybody. All of my coworkers, I know they like take the train for like an hour or two to get into the office.
But this was part of that Nelly's article, which is that the hipster bros who have the money, they want to be where the action is. Yeah. They don't want to live out of town. Not moving to Mill Valley. Let's talk. We're going to get to Elizabeth Warren, but I wanted to get a few other stories in there. You are talking in your Elgin.com blog post, Mike, about Apple's self-driving car. The news has been mixed about that. Apple's laying off 200 engineers from their self-driving car enterprise.
Yep.
They're moving many others to other parts of the company.
Right.
What is Apple? Are they, you know, we'd heard that they were at first going to build a car, then they had changed their plans and said, no, we're going to sell services.
Yeah.
But I've also quoted Elon Musk, who said, you know, if you really want to build a self-driving car, you have to have both the data and the hardware.
And that's Apple's way anyway, to control and profit from
Steve put it a little differently than that, but he said, if you want to control the platform, you have to make the hardware and the software.
Yeah. He talked about cars and trucks. He literally meant cars and trucks. I basically what I do is I bust 10 myths around the Apple car. There's a lot of myths going around. The first one is the one you mentioned with the layoffs. Everybody's like, oh, they're
it's over.
Yeah, it's over. So that represents 3.8% based on our best information of the people working on Titan, the self-driving car project at Apple, 3.8%. When Tesla lays off 9% of their workforce, people don't go, I guess they're pivoting away from cars.
That's amazing. That's only a few percentages.
Yeah, they have 5,000 people within
Holy
Apple.
Holy cow.
Best information working on it. Not all of them are full-time, but they have a lot of different things. The AI people are working on AI and also self-driving car AI.
It's related.
Hardware design people. So the way, and so I talk about lots and lots of things. People say, well, they're not going to manufacture cars. Well, you know what? Guess what? They don't manufacture phones either. They use a contract manufacturer.
There are, in fact, there's one in Europe that builds
cars
for
It's in Austria. And they have people, 4 years ago, there was reports that about a dozen engineers from Magna Steyr, I think it's called, in Austria, were working in their secret Sunnyvale facility. That's 4 years ago. So there's no indication that they have stopped working with Magna Steyr. They will do a contract manufacturing vehicle. And there's also a report coming out of Germany this week that they are not building a car. They're building a van, right? And that Apple is very focused
for
on the
delivery?
Interior. No, for
a
passengers.
Living room.
A living room, right? A content consumption experience on wheels. This is the vision I think they're going to have. And here's a little bit of tidbit that I love because it was in black and white and almost everybody really missed it. Tim Cook said in an interview, I think last year or within the last year and a half or so, that Apple is looking at launching a ride service. He essentially hinted strongly that they were looking at that as a thing. And I think it makes a lot of sense. If you think about a self-driving car built and designed by Apple, with the whole Apple content consumption experience, Apple virtual reality that's coming in the future, Apple augmented reality that's coming in the future, Apple Music, Apple this, Apple that. It's like an Apple store living room. It's an Apple store on wheels. Yeah.
And so I actually have some secret video from the Waymo project I'd like to show you. This is Apple's vision for the self-driving car of the future. We're all going to be living in these chairs.
Yeah. And, that's it. Exactly. That's it.
And it's all Apple all the time.
Right.
Actually,
Wally was a documentary.
And now I'm going to get taken down by Disney, so I'm going to stop.
Anyway, the main point of this article is to bust the myths. There's things we know, things we don't know, but there's a lot of misconceptions out there, and I wanted to clear them.
You did point out that the number of Apple's California's DMV report came out on self-driving vehicles. The number of disengagements for Apple was so huge, it disengaged, which means a driver took over once every 1.1 miles.
Right.
That's way higher than Waymo's, which drove for 11,000 miles.
Waymo's amazing. Yeah. Waymo's amazing. So all the 28 car companies that have been given approval by the California DMV to test self-driving cars in California, they require all this data and they make it public. So Waymo is way ahead of the pack in terms of disengagements.
Apple's at the
second,
bottom.
Second to the bottom. Uber is like every half a mile or every 0.4 miles, they're disengaging. What we don't know is why anybody's disengaging. Apple, in a letter to the DMV, said that they are very conservative on disengagements. So we don't know why they're disengaging. They probably just have this policy that it's like, we are not going to have an accident. Like, no matter what, we don't have an accident. That's job
Take
one.
Take over if you have the slightest doubt.
That'd be my guess. Yeah. The other thing is that Apple's disengagements have improved like by a couple of orders of magnitude from the previous year. From 2017 to 2018, they've gotten way, way better. That's another distraction because basically Apple is not trying to beat Waymo to market, and they will not beat Waymo to market. Apple's not going to go anywhere near self-driving cars until they're ubiquitous.
I have to point out, though, that there's no indication that Apple might even productize this. They have so much money. Having 1,200 full-time engineers working on something that they never release.
Right.
No big deal.
Here's how to reverse engineer Apple's thinking on this. Everything Apple does is either optimized for content consumption or content creation. Their trucks are for content creation. They have big expensive computers for people who make movies and things like that. And then the iPhones and all the other products are for content consumption and communication. In the future, self-driving cars, we're going to spend lots and lots of time in self. I'm talking 20 years from now, 30 years from now. We're going to spend a third of our lives in self-driving cars. We're going to have hotel rooms on wheels, so you'll wake up in a different city that you went to bed in, stuff like that. Apple can either let other companies control the profits from this content consumption experience, or they can control it themselves. As Apple executives have actually said, and I quote, "A car is the ultimate mobile device. It's an inside-out iPhone on wheels is the way they're probably looking at it. Right? And when the car is driving you around, there's nothing to do except play video games, watch movies.
We know a number of big tech companies have been looking at this. Like, exactly. Do we put ads all over it? You don't need to look outside.
Right, right. And Apple, and so...
Maybe it's not even an individual car. Maybe it's a transport vehicle.
I think it's lots of things. I mean, the way I look at it is that a self-driving car is a
It might just
sandwich.
Come, and, like an airporter. It might just pick you up.
It could be lots of things. A self-driving car is a sandwich. The bottom chassis is like batteries with an electric motor on each of the wheels. That's commoditizable. In a
That's
few
done.
Years, that'll be nothing. It's cheap, et cetera.
Everybody's doing it.
The top slice of bread is the self-driving car AI that, like, enables you to navigate and stuff like that. What goes between that can be anything, and almost doesn't matter. You'd be able to plug and play modules. You have a bedroom, a game room, a this or that. It doesn't matter. The point is that there's going to be a lot of content being consumed in these vehicles because there's nothing else to do. And so the other question you have to ask yourself is, Apple's been on this trajectory of approaching and then declining from and then reapproaching a trillion dollar valuation as a company. Are they just going to give up and lay down and go to sleep? Or are they going to try to keep growing? And what consumer product do people spend thousands and thousands of dollars on besides iPhones and stuff like that? Cars.
I have pictures shot in Cupertino through the trees of Apple's new living room vehicle. It looks just like...
Is that inflatable?
This is Sleeper. I'm desperately trying to get the podcast taken down. That's all I can do. All right, let's
stir up that controversy. You can be the next Laura Loomer.
Stirring it up.
Chain yourself to Disney's front door.
All right, let's take a break. I want to talk about Elizabeth Warren, how we can break up big tech. And see if this is at all is this a non-starter or if this is at all reasonable. Some people think it's a great. Scott Galloway said this is it. This
breaking is up is hard to do, according to Neil Sedaka.
We know that. But first, let's take a look at a little movie we made about the week just gone by on Twit.
Previously on Twit,
we have a special guest in the studio.
I'm so excited!
The Rhodey Matic is here.
Now, quick, before it cools off, we're going to pop it in this Federal Express bag.
Wait!
Okay, quick, give it to the courier. Okay.
You'll be getting that tomorrow morning. You can't get any fresher than that.
I can't wait.
Security Now.
We have a picture of 19-year-old Santiago Lopez. He is the first bug bounty hunter millionaire just from finding and reporting security vulnerabilities through HackerOne's bug bounty program. I think what we're seeing is a sea change here. Hacker-powered security. If you've got skills with a Z, I think you ought to consider it.
Triangulation.
What happens when you give up Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, and Amazon?
I had a close friend who had her baby the week I was blocking Facebook, and I didn't find out about it until later. And so I called her and I said, hey, I didn't realize I'd given birth. And she said, well, you know, if I post something to Facebook, I just assume that everybody I know sees it.
Twit.
That's right.
Why didn't I get your mass text? I'm in your contacts.
Very exciting. This is yours, Jeff. It's got your name written all over it.
Oh, it's beautiful. I think I see the face of Jesus in it.
I was going to say Mary or Jesus. Oh, Jeff, you got tongs.
You got the tongs.
Whoa.
Seal that up. All right.
Nice.
Okay. There it is. Going to the courier.
I think we made FedEx. Still no word if those rotis have arrived. Do we still have the Rhodey-matic? Should we make roadies for our entire studio?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Get right. We'll get right on that.
It is $1,000 machine that cranks out flatbreads, Indian style pancakes at the rate of, what is it, one minute?
1 minute. Pancake a minute.
I could keep up with that easily.
I picked a bad week to give up carbs, I can tell you. Our show today brought to you by Atlassian. We are an Atlassian house. When there's a technical issue, we put it in Jira. Jira is where everything goes. You know who's responsible. You know what stage it's in, what's going on with it. At the same time as they're using Jira, they will also put it in Confluence. They'll document the fix. They'll document the workflow. We couldn't live without Atlassian. Atlassian is a collaboration software company that empowers IT teams like ours and all over the world. It is a big deal. If you are an IT team, you know that in this cloud-based world, it's you that has to plan and execute faster than ever. The burden is on you. Incidents require open, agile, smart coordination between ops and software development teams. The expectations are high, the stakes are high, and it's IT that's right smack dab at the center. Falling short inside of business critical workflows, that's just not an option. That's why so many teams like ours use Atlassian. The company behind Jira, their software tools are designed to manage complex, challenging situations like that and keep the collaboration flowing. And by the way, I think sometimes people think Agile is just for developers. No, Atlassian offers an affordable, reliable suite of tools for teams of all sizes, from DevOps to Agile, IT apps to Ops to ITSM, whatever's next. The technology backbone to help IT organizations plan, service, and support the kind of change that propels business. I mentioned Jira. I mentioned Confluence. There's Bitbucket if you have software code base. With OpsGenie and Status Page, you can helps you detect incidents, coordinate response efforts, keep stakeholders and customers up to date. All of that's so important. They have Trello now. I tell you, they are an amazing company. And it all integrates seamlessly with Confluence and Jira, so you can document it, you can keep everybody up to date, and you don't have to bounce from platform to get the job done. And I think that's really important because it's so important that we get this documentation. I want to make it as easy as possible for our engineering and IT team. Like all of Atlassian's products, the tools for your team are easy and free to try. And all you have to do is go to Atlassian.com/IT and try it. Find out which tools are best for you. Try Atlassian today to see what IT can be. Atlassian.com/IT. We thank them so much for their support. Keeping the Heinlein said, the roads must roll. The twit must flow. That doesn't sound right at all.
The roti must roll.
We're firing up the Rotomatic. There's a little warm-up time, but then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's going to take us 10 minutes to feed the entire audience and staff.
Incredible.
Incredible.
Yeah.
They don't look that enthused.
Yeah. Oh, a dry piece of bread. That sounds great.
Definitely worth $1,000.
Definitely.
It's only the beginning, though. In the future, the machines will churn out an entire Indian meal, starting with the roti next.
I hope it doesn't churn out an entire Indian. That would be very strange.
If they can cook, that'd be great.
Oh, I'm getting punchy. All right.
You need some carbs.
There are how many people running for president in the Democratic Party? It seems like
150.
It's quite a large number. There's some Republicans who have announced as well. Elizabeth Warren, one of the front runners. Certainly, she has the name recognition. Wrote a post on Medium. Well, it says Team Warren, but it's by Elizabeth Warren. Here's how we can break up big tech. 25 years ago, Facebook, Google, and Amazon didn't exist. Now they're among the most valuable and well-known companies in the world. It's a great story, but also one that highlights why the government must break up monopolies and promote competitive markets. Aren't we glad, she writes, that we now have the option of using Google instead of being stuck with Bing? Yes. But today's big tech companies have too much power over our economy, our society, our democracy, and then the process, and I think this is maybe her most important point, they've hurt small businesses and stifled innovation. So she says her administration will make big structural changes to the tech sector to promote competition, including breaking up Amazon, Facebook, and Google. And in a conversation with Nilay Patel later this week, she said, and I'm going to put Apple in there as well. You can read the arguments. I think a lot of people will have a visceral reaction to this. I underlined an important part of this, as did John Battelle. These companies would be prohibited from owning, and this is something I've actually always complained about with Google, owning both the platform utility and any participants on that platform. It's always bothered me that YouTube was owned by Google.
Yeah.
And that YouTube results always showed up very high. There's even a bar of YouTube results on Google searches. Platform utilities, she writes, would be required to meet a standard of fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory dealing with users. That's FRAND. Mm-hmm. That's a little different. That's a patent a dogma. Platform utilities would not be allowed to transfer or share data with third parties. I like that. So let's start with you, Paris. What, regardless of your political bent, is this viable? Is this doable?
I think that this is viable, and I think it's incredibly necessary, especially I think if we're coming from a platform and e-commerce perspective. I mean, sure, people think about Amazon as an e-commerce company, and really Amazon is so much more than that. I don't think most people realize the breadth of Amazon as a company and the things that it touches. But I suppose if we're going to just look from the e-commerce niche, Amazon's a great example of why this is necessary, and the fact that if you go search something on Amazon and probably something in the first three top results is going to be a product from Amazon, either an Amazon Basics. Like, let's say we search for charging cables for your iPhone. You're probably going to have an Amazon Basics cable pop up, or if not that, Amazon has hundreds of private label brands, something that doesn't seem like it's being sold by Amazon, but is manufactured, shipped, and fulfilled by Amazon. How the company does this is, since it owns the platform, it realizes, hey, a lot of people are looking for iPhone chargers or dog hats or whatever. We don't sell dog hats. We're going to make an Amazon labeled dog hat so that we get both the, in addition to the commission we'd normally make off a third-party dog hat being bought, we get the entire price of it. We get the entire revenue from that. And Amazon has the power to direct consumers towards its goods and to sync its competitors down in the search page to page two, which means no one will see it, much less if it was at page 15. And this sort of power is something that has serious consequences for small businesses and innovators, because why would you, if you're an entrepreneur or a small business, why would you invest resources into trying to figure out the next hot product that people are going to be buying online? Because you're going to have to go through Amazon, and the minute your product ends up succeeding, Amazon is probably going to copy it and then push you back to the second or third page, or push you down to search result five, and won't be making any money.
She also talks about the predatory practices Amazon will use, as with diapers.com, where a company comes along, a former Amazon employee said, I know, I'll focus on diapers. Amazon immediately undercuts him, kills his business, and then buys it.
Right.
Zappos.
And Amazon's done with this hundreds of companies. Recently, me and my colleague, Luis Matsakis, at the end of last year, we tried to put together a list of all the different companies that Amazon owned. And it was one of the hardest things that we have ever done, because it's absolutely unreal, the hundreds and hundreds of companies that are Amazon. And anytime something comes up that is a competitor towards it, it purchases it. In India, in Saudi Arabia, and other places, Amazon has bought the Amazon equivalents. And most recently, India passed one of the strictest e-commerce regulations aimed at breaking up the monopolies of companies like Amazon or Walmart when it comes to e-commerce. And even that has kind of only had mixed effects on the company. It's required Amazon to reduce its stakes, how much it owns of these third-party entities that it sells on its site. But still, Amazon has so much of a market share that it's able to kind of get around even some of the strictest regulations.
Right, and the algorithmic, Leo downplayed what they did. Undercut pricing sounds like, they have competitive pricing. That's a good thing.
No,
they were using really sophisticated algorithms to, in real time, undercut the price of literally every product on diaper.com to always be lower no matter what, no matter how much money. They don't care about losing money. They're making money in other places. And it's like literally they could just drive any company out of business.
It's almost classic monopoly use of monopoly power.
But on steroids, because it's all algorithmic and you know, now they have AI. That
he says,
she says, because Amazon makes almost all of its profits from AWS and it has a total stronghold on the cloud services market, it can sell everything on Amazon and generally does for a loss if it wanted to and still be able to make a bunch of profit.
She says we would spin off Amazon's marketplace, Google's ad exchange, Google search. They would be called platform utilities. Amazon marketplace and basics, Google's ad exchange and businesses on the exchange would be split apart. Google search would have to be spun off. She would take a, she would split off Zappos and Whole Foods from Amazon. She would unwind the Facebook acquisition of WhatsApp and Instagram. She would take away Google's Waze, Nest, and DoubleClick, which is their ad platform. She says unwinding these mergers will promote healthy competition in the market, will put pressure on big tech companies to be more responsive to user concerns about privacy. I have to say my first reaction was, oh, hell no, because it feels like you're – I think we have this in this country sometimes. You're punishing them for being too successful, saying, is that what went wrong? The tree got too big? But I have to say the arguments you just gave, Paris, are a really perfect example of why it's not good for society if a company – owns too much and gets too big.
But it's worse than that because, as Paris was alluding, the problem is that our laws are based on a world where, okay, so, you know, there's a company and you buy products from them and if they get too big and then you can break them up and then, you know, it's just like, it's a one-to-one relationship between the customer and the company. In this case, there's no pressure that the public can put on Amazon when they don't even know that the companies they're buying from are Amazon, when they don't understand that, that the profits they make from AWS are enabling them to lose money on all kinds of markets until they crush it, in which case they, and at which point in time they raise prices. There was a study done where they did this in certain narrow academic markets for books where they basically undercut these books and to the point the publishers that they were competing with to the point where the publishers went out of business. And as soon as the publishers went out of business, they quadrupled their prices.
Right.
For that category. I mean, that's the kind
perfect
of thing.
Perfect example.
Even if they don't do it, they have the power to do it. And should they have the power to do it? And that's problematic.
She also says, my proposals won't solve every problem we have with our big tech companies. We must give people more control. This is what we were talking about earlier about how their personal information is collected, shared and sold, and do it in a way that doesn't lock in massive competitive advantages for the companies that already have a ton of our data. Let's ask Socialist Europe what it thinks.
Yes.
Honestly, I'm not even I'm very surprised, first of all, that she would make this essentially her platform. I did think the US was ready to consider this idea. I'm also very surprised that you all seem to be in favor of it. That's another thing I wasn't expecting. But overall, I'm not sure that how doable it is, but I think it almost doesn't matter. The key takeaway I have from this is that this is now in the conversation. This is a concern for the American public, for the American political scene. And even if it doesn't happen, even if, you know, she doesn't become the Democratic nominee, even if she doesn't, even if she does and she changes things when she actually gets into office, it's kind of putting it in the public consciousness in a way that I think until 6 months ago would have been unimaginable, maybe going back a year, and until she actually put it in that Medium post, I don't think people would have think was possible. So
I was shocked.
Creating
that
conversation.
Yeah, it's a great point. So many Overton windows are being shattered in American political discourse.
That?
The Overton window is the range of topics that is socially acceptable to even raise and question.
Yeah.
And, you know, a few years ago, you couldn't even suggest something like this.
Right.
But now everybody's taking it seriously. And, you know, the chances that Elizabeth Warren will become president in 2020, you know, I don't know what the chances are, but it almost doesn't matter because
does this help
they're
her
building a Democratic Party platform. So even the
it might end up on the platform.
Exactly.
Does it help them or does it hurt them?
I think it helps them because I think
America in the majority supports an idea like this.
I think that's probably true. What Americans are not thinking a lot about, on the other hand, just to play a devil's advocacy, I mean, personally, I agree with Patrick in the sense that I don't care. Like if they break up Facebook and some of our other and Google and some of our beloved companies, Apple, et cetera, a lot of people's instinctive reaction is say, I love the products, I love this company, I don't want them to be harmed. But, you know, if there were three apples, that wouldn't be terrible. And all the shareholders would now be the owners of three.
It actually,
you
know, could create more absolute value.
I mean, Alphabet did it voluntarily, yeah. Sort of. But the larger implication is that these companies are global giants. I mean, Facebook, Google, Amazon's becoming a global giant. Apple is obviously a global giant. Somebody's going to be a global giant. And if we dismantle the American global giants, then the Chinese global giants are going to become the new global giants. And we got to think about whether we want that. And I wish Europe would step up in terms of, there's so much technology in Europe, but the funding and other cultural aspects of the startup culture aren't happening. So where's the French Google? Where's the German Facebook? Where is the...
Yeah, why isn't there? I mean, there is a French search engine.
We ask ourselves that question all the time. I think there's... I have no idea what I'm talking about. But I think there is a lot of market size that is problematic. In Europe, even though we try to create a single market, and we have in many ways, the language barrier is one thing. Then even with the harmonization of laws, there are still variations with different parts of the EU. In the US and in China, you can start your business and immediately have access to, 250 million customers. It's a little bit more complicated for us. So I think that plays into it. I also think, as much as it pains me to say it, our tax regimen, or however you want to call it, is maybe a little bit less friendly to aggressive entrepreneurship. That's possible. But we have now lived in a world where we have, you know, the as we call them in France, the GAFAM, so Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, and Microsoft, are ruling the world. We know what it looks like. We know what the positive things are. We know what the negative things are. I think it wouldn't necessarily be a horrible thing to try out, try breaking them down and seeing what happens. And maybe it would open up. We were a little bit slow in Europe and in other countries to get on the internet train. And maybe it was too late, you know, when the things we realized and the companies were already there and choking everyone, the competition out of everyone else. Maybe that could reignite a little bit of competition in other countries as well. Honestly, I don't know what would happen. But I think we know where we are now, and there are some, I could be convinced that it could, that it, we should try it out, I guess.
I wonder though, if we're just turning America into Europe.
I'm jumping on this because, I know that there's this fear of Europe and the way things function here, and you know, people call socialism, which actually on the Fidesz Club, another show I do, Saul from Venezuela said, socialism doesn't really mean anything anymore because it encompasses everything from Cuba to Sweden.
Right.
Socialism doesn't mean anything. No. So when you're talking about Europe, you're really talking socialism in Europe or social democracy. It's still the open market. You still have, like, it's essentially California, more or less.
You're talking about higher taxes and safety nets.
Well, yes.
I mean, isn't socialism technically government ownership of major industries?
Right, which is why it doesn't mean anything. I mean, Europe, some of these Scandinavian countries that are constantly being called socialists are super capitalistic. They just have super high taxes, and there's a safety net.
What I meant by that, though, is the kind of anti-entrepreneurial climate, and you what you left out is something Loïc Lemur has always bemoaned, a French entrepreneur who lives in the U.S., is just the lack of a venture funding economy and culture in Europe means it's hard to get a startup because it's hard to raise the money. And also somewhat of a culture that fears failure in a way that supposedly Silicon Valley does not. More traditional culture. But what my point was not so much that. It's just that here's what I think the risk of what Warren is proposing and is that we will create an environment much like Europe where it's harder to create a giant. We discourage it. But then there are countries who don't discourage it, like China. And all of a sudden, Alibaba dominates world commerce.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Baidu becomes the world's search engine / advertising engine because they don't stop their capitalistic enterprises, oddly enough, even though they're a communist country. I mean, isn't that a risk that we could and of course, a lot of very wealthy people will say it also disincents us to create big, successful companies because we know you're just going to take it away from us if we get too big.
I suppose it is a risk.
Go ahead, Paris.
Oh, continue. No, oh, I mean, I suppose it is, Paris, it is a risk, but there is these arguments were also made when the breakup of Standard Oil was under consideration, which, of course, did set off a large chain reaction of increasing antitrust legislation and company breaking up decisions from the Supreme Court, which eventually created the backlash of deregulation that led to these tech giants. If you guys haven't, or if listeners haven't listened to it, Planet Money, NPR's podcast, did a really great 3-part podcast special on antitrust that goes from Standard Oil to the backlash to the tech giants of today so fantastic.
Okay.
And it covers all of this in depth. Which is really aptly timed for the Elizabeth Warren announcement. But I think that we're at a point where current antitrust legislation and the mindset in among these regulators is less about actively kind of policing these kind of collections of power that previously we would have thought of as needing regulation. And it's more about is there any physical sign that this is negatively impacting consumers in a way like, oh, can we look at it and see we're getting worse prices on goods that we buy because Amazon exists? But that doesn't take into account the kind of new reality where these things are not as easily, they're not as transparent. We can't see what competition would be like if we didn't have Amazon because Amazon is the reality.
It's
and
true.
I guess in the same
have no idea.
In regards to search engines and Google or Facebook and Microsoft, it's kind of just created a bubble that we live in where there's really no argument otherwise.
Yeah.
I think there's this conversation. I mean, Paris seems the most convinced that maybe it would be beneficial to break them up. I think Mike and I are maybe on the fence, maybe you too, Leo. But I think this conversation is a conversation that can happen. Most people that would say, oh, this would be absolutely terrible, and this, you know, this is this party saying this or that party, is not looking at the situation as it is. There are big companies, and then there are companies that are literally, we have a saying in French, they're doing the rain and nice weather. Like basically they're controlling the world. They are not just big companies. They are gigantic and they have influences in every aspect of the economy, our lives, the political life, everything. And I think if you look at this and don't even stop to think about that question, should we break them up? Then your reasoning is not motivated by a cold look at the situation. It might be motivated by some, you know, political dogma. The conversation is and the question are valid to ask and to discuss. Whether or not the answer is absolutely yes or absolutely no, I don't know. But we're in a situation where this is something that should be discussed.
And Patrick is right. I am on the fence. I'm both against it and in favor of it. And I'm not really. It's a complicated issue. But let me put on a tinfoil hat for a second and just ask a rhetorical question. Let's say we are in 2020. We have a Republican who's dead set against breaking up the social networks. And we have a Democratic candidate who says, when I'm president, I am going to break them up. What would it take for Facebook to tweak their algorithm to make sure the Lord. Republican was elected?
Oh, Lord, yeah.
And would we
or
know?
Or just funnel millions of dollars into that candidate's
pretty much. Elizabeth Warren just guaranteed no checks from Google, Facebook, Microsoft.
They actually had a town hall within Facebook before the 2016 election, and a lot of Facebook employees were like, we can't let Trump become president. Well, let's fix this. We have the power to just like have the other person be president. And they thought about it, and they discussed it, and they decided
that's
no.
That's terrible.
So it's like, you know, that's the best argument for breaking them up.
Yeah.
That's too much power.
And it's also an argument that it might be too late.
Yeah, right.
My only concern is is actually the political concern, whether it's too fast, too far for the American people. And, I feel like the Democrats are emboldened, progressives are emboldened by Trump's presidency and hoping that there'll be such a reaction against Trump that they can finally get through a bunch of progressive legislation mm-hmm. that's been stalled for decades.
I think that's right. I think that's
and it may be a mistake. It might actually be the wrong thing to do. And I just don't know.
I think that there's a possibility that this could be a viable platform for a conservative candidate as well, given the current generally conservative backed like moral crisis over the power of tech giants. I have a feed on my silly 27 column tweet deck thing of people in kind of the right wing conspiracy watching world, and a lot of them were at CPAC, and we're talking about, I don't know if you saw, there was one CPAC panel that was called like blocked, a conversation on or this panel has been blocked by Facebook or something like that, a conversation about censorship, and this outrage is no more present than it is in these conservative circles when it comes to the power of big tech. This is the largest boogeyman. Right. And I think as it should be across both sides of the aisle.
This idea of regulation and an overbearing government as it faces corporations is kind of a 20th century argument too. What's actually happening in real life, whether we like it or not, and regardless of which side of the political spectrum anyone is on, there's a huge balance of power being shifted from governments and the public to corporations and a bunch of billionaires who individually have and wield enormous power. Jeff Bezos has the Washington Post and a space program.
Right.
I mean, the individuals have more power now than we ever even imagined, and it's just going to continue and continue. So I think this is one of the first examples of a clumsy attempt to deal with the fact that corporations are becoming more powerful than government. And I think from a big picture perspective, we have to deal with the really larger issue. It's not just tech companies. It's corporations in general running the government and having more power than the government. And what does that mean for the power of the people if we believe in democracy?
It is challenging. And as a tech lover and a tech journalist, my first reaction was horror.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there might be the only reasonable way out of what is clearly a problem, a bind we've gotten ourselves into. And I think that that's one of the reasons Mark Zuckerberg wrote his blog post.
Yeah.
But you're right. They have other levers they can pull that are much more devious, nefarious, and scary. Patrick Beja from FrenchSpin.com. It's great to have you on. We're not wrapping up quite yet, but we're almost done. Don't worry. Your long nightmare is almost over. And I wish I could send you a roti. Our audience is eating these dry pieces of flatbread that we've printed practically on a 3D printer.
They're gamely forcing them down.
We will be giving you beverages soon. Don't worry. I know we
but we're going to charge
also
you for those.
Printed.
Also 3D printed. Paris Martineau from Wired. So great to have you. Mike Elgin,
great
our
to be here.
Peripatetic digital nomad. Great to have you. Our show today brought to you by, and I'll give you all a chance, think about what you want to plug. I'll give you all a chance to do that in a minute. But first, a word from FreshBooks, the company that changed my outlook on life about 10 years ago. I was sending invoices out because I was doing a lot of freelance work, and I just hated it. Along comes this brand new startup, and it was so cool. They made it so easy to do invoices. And in the process of doing invoices, do my cloud accounting, do all my bookkeeping. It was awesome. FreshBooks is the all-in-one cloud accounting solution helping small business owners succeed. You'll hardly do any accounting. You'll do more of what you love. All you have to do is use FreshBooks to make those invoices. Invoices, by the way, that get you paid as much as twice as fast. That's the average. Just because it's you're able to suddenly to take online payments right through the invoice. Your clients love that. You'll love that. Clients will compliment you on the professionalism of your invoices. And then in the process of doing the invoicing and putting your expenses in through the FreshBooks app in the invoice or into the FreshBooks database, logging your hours with time tracking, you'll get all the accounting reports. You'll get, accounts receivable, accounts payable, expenses. You'll know for the first time, for a lot of us, it was the first time I knew whether I was making money or not. It's kind of a nice feeling when you look at your profit statement. All of that done automatically by FreshBooks. Automated recurring invoices. Log every hour with time tracking. Easy to understand reports. Easily capture expenses. Categorize those automatically to make filing taxes a breeze. When April 15th comes around, FreshBooks is your accountant will love you for the reports that you can generate from FreshBooks. It makes it so easy. And with the FreshBooks mobile app, you can run your business from everywhere. Capture expenses with the camera, send invoices, know the moment you get paid all from the palm of your hand. And it works with everything you're already using, Gusto, G Suite, Fundbox, Stripe, Bench, on and Expensify. Whatever your apps you're using to keep track of your business, FreshBooks will integrate it in, make it easy. And they're always adding new features, which I love too. Here's the deal. Don't wait another day. Boost your productivity and try FreshBooks now. Visit FreshBooks.com/twit, and you can try it free for 30 days. By then you'll know, believe me, what a great deal FreshBooks is. Enter the words This Week in Tech in the How Did You Hear About Us section, if you would. That way they'll know you heard it here, This Week in Tech. FreshBooks.com/twit, your 30-day trial awaits, and we thank FreshBooks so much for supporting me back in the day and our podcast all these years. FreshBooks.com/twit. House Democrats plan to put out legislation to reinstate net neutrality. It probably doesn't have a chance in hell, but Patrick told me not to say that.
Well, that's different. It wouldn't pass because politically
it has to get through the Senate.
It wouldn't get voted.
Yeah,
right?
It has to get signed by the president and et cetera. But it would be nice. The Senate actually did vote in May to reinstate net neutrality rules. So it's possible there are enough votes there.
What we need above all is to have the rules not change every time there's a new president.
Yeah.
It'd be really nice to set them in stone.
And Congress really can decide on this because Congress tells the FCC what to do. The FCC's mandate comes from Congress. Almost always when these things happen, the FCC says, well, if you want this, tell Congress.
Right.
Get them to set the rules and then we can go ahead and enforce them. So I just want to let you know, write your member of Congress, because I'm sure you all agree net neutrality is a good thing. Huawei, a little pissed over the U.S. government's ban on Huawei equipment and the 5G networks. They're suing. they had a press conference in Shenzhen, China. The lawsuit is being brought in where, you might ask, the Eastern District of Texas.
Isn't that where all the patent trolls go?
Yeah, it also is where Huawei's U.S. headquarters is located.
And that's where Apple moved their Apple store away from to punish them?
Apple moved both its Apple stores away from the Eastern District so that they wouldn't have any presence there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to punish them, but
it doesn't cover.
Would you like a roadie, Mike?
Sure, I would love one. Thank you.
Paris, would you like me to mail you a roadie?
Huh. Yeah, I'll keep an eye on my PO box for some roadie.
They are perfect, each and every one, a perfect example of what a roadie could be.
Do you have anything besides Mexican food? Oh, I'm sorry, that was three
not
amigos.
A tortilla, although it will make tortillas. It will make pizzas. It will make any kind of flatbread. It turns out...
Would you like some?
No, thanks. Okay. I literally am off carbohydrates.
Oh.
It turns out that every culture has its own flatbread, I believe.
Hmm. The perfect food?
It's the perfect food. It's
so flat. How is...
Yes?
Sorry, I was getting back to Huawei. I apologize.
Oh, okay. Flatbread. Go ahead. You want to talk about tech?
Tech news?
No, this I was just curious, actually, because I have a show to record in a couple of days, and I have no idea what Huawei is suing the U.S. government for. Or, I mean, I know why they're pissed, but how are they, what argument are they bringing forth? If you could write my show for me, that would be great.
I will tell you exactly what Huawei Deputy Chairman Guo Ping said. That no evidence had been presented for its ban on Huawei products, and thus it was unconstitutional. In other words, They just said, look, we don't think it's safe, so you can't use it. The ban prevents us from serving our U.S. customers, says Huawei, damages our reputation, true, and deprives us of an opportunity to serve customers outside the United States. It violates separation of power principles, breaks U.S. legal traditions, and goes against the very nature of the U.S. Constitution.
I guess they have a point. The funny thing is, of course, the origin country of Huawei doesn't play by those rules. But
no. I hear that Guoping also stands during the national anthem, I'm told with good authority.
So if I may, I have a prepared statement about Huawei.
Thank you.
There's a lot of conversation about how it's unfair and how there's no evidence and all, everything they say is complete BS. And here's why. They say, oh, we wouldn't do such a thing. We haven't done such a thing. It doesn't matter. The Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese government wants to take control of whatever they're doing with their 5G networks. They will. And they can. Yeah. This is a country
Nothing
that builds islands
that.
In order to steal territorial waters.
All right.
We all know that routers and network equipment like 5G, whatever they call them.
Switches and routers.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yep.
These things are constantly being software updated.
That's right.
Those software updates can have any sort of payload.
That's right.
If those are coming from Beijing and the Chinese government were in a conflict with them in the future, they could just have access to all internet traffic. They could shut anything down. They could do any of these things. I think I personally support the U.S. government on this score simply because I don't trust the Chinese government, and I think they're a little too eager to own all the 5G equipment in the future. That's just such a choke point on the whole world's information infrastructure, and I just don't like them having that kind of access.
So this is reasonable risk assessment. It seems like that could be a strong argument in the lawsuit, right? Sure. Seems like an actual argument that could be heard.
Yeah. So
we shall see.
Yep.
I mean, there is a dearth of evidence that Huawei is doing anything now, but as you point out, there doesn't have to be because they would have to do. Speaking of monopoly, Amazon is teaming up with the Yankees, Sinclair Broadcasting, and others to buy the Yankees Sports Network from 21st Century Fox. In fact, somebody has said, and I think it's probably true, I think it was on MacBreak Weekly, it was Alex Lindsay who said, you ain't seen nothing yet. When the NFL, Major League Baseball, and NBA contracts run out, broadcasters are going to face outsized bids from Netflix, Amazon, Google and
Facebook.
Others,
yes.
Facebook, that goodbye television rights, they're all going to go to tech companies.
Yeah.
Because NBC, CBS, ESPN, they just can't compete.
I'm fine.
They don't
with
have
that.
The cash.
It's slightly cheaper for these companies to simply buy the TV networks.
You know what? Just do that. Just do that.
Apple personally could buy Hollywood.
That's right. They have more money than Hollywood's cash. Worth. Is Elon in trouble again? I don't know.
Probably.
You know, I feel bad for Elon because here SpaceX did this great thing with the Dragon Crew rocket. They successfully got it to the space station. It's going to be coming down.
Yeah.
That should have been the headline. Instead, it's Elon getting fined by the SEC again.
Also, he's being investigated because he has government contracts. And he's smoking pot.
He's
smoking weed.
Yeah. Look. Writes Chris Stolmetsch at Bloomberg. Just quit tweeting, okay? Investors sue Tesla and Musk again, saying his...
The funniest part of this is that I think, what was it, in Jack's Twitter thread or something, maybe it was the one that he did with Kara Swisher, maybe it was a different interview, somebody asked him, who's your ideal of the best Twitter user? And he said, Elon Musk.
Elon Musk
is the... For I'm ideal of a good Twitter user. And I'm like, what are you thinking about your platform,
well,
Jack? I mean, I guess he can
it's good for Jack.
Create a lot of headlines. It's
yeah.
good for Jack. Is it's it good for anyone else?
It's not good for
Elon.
Elon.
It's not good for Tesla. Not good for us and our sanity.
So the lawsuit, which is from the Laborers District Council and Contractors Pension Fund of Ohio, wants to enjoin Elon to permanently block Musk's unchecked use of Twitter. To ban him from Twitter. He already has paid $40 million in fines for tweets.
All I want is an interview with the attorney appointed to be his Twitter sitter. A look into that person's life has got to be a hellish.
Yeah. The SEC asked a judge to fine him in contempt for violating the settlement by failing to clear a February tweet with the attorney appointed to be his Twitter sitter. What does this guy do? You know what's ironic? That Elon has a Twitter sitter, but nobody can stop the president from tweeting.
Right.
Nobody. Maybe he needs a Twitter sitter.
Well, those are different conversations.
They are.
But I think the quote you're talking about Elon Musk came from Sam Harris, if I'm not mistaken. And they also talk about Trump's tweeting and how, you know, he violates terms of service, et cetera. And the argument was that, well we take into account newsworthiness. Yeah. Everything the president of the United States says in public is newsworthy, and therefore that
absolutely Trump's, well, and it should.
Which is,
honestly,
if you want to talk about weaseling out of, you know, something,
their responsibilities.
Yes, sure, it is newsworthiness. But the reality is you can't get away with, you know, banning the president of the United States from Twitter. That's the problem. It's not about newsworthiness.
Yeah. Everybody, you know, critics want that to happen. But that would
be... All you have to say is, he's the president.
Yeah. Besides, if you for critics of Trump... all that stuff he says on Twitter, that's all going to end up in the indictments. I mean, half the material in the cases against him.
Yeah, honestly, that's the Twitter shitter should come from Trump's own people.
Exactly.
Because anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
Let's not get political. I think we can wrap this up. You guys are a great panel, and I brought the biggest stories, I think, in some respects of the year to you, and you handle them with aplomb and intelligence, and I always count on that. It's so great to have you. Paris Martineau is a staff writer at Wired. Her byline is always worth reading at wired.com. I paid for my subscription just for you, Paris.
Ah, thanks.
Yes.
Just glad that I can keep having a job.
Yes. Glad to support you. Anything you want to plug? You doing a podcast? Anything you want to tell the people?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I'd want to plug is probably my Twitter handle, at Paris Martin, which is on the screen. I've been tweeting a little bit less than usual as of late, mostly because I've been working on this big investigation for the past 2 months that I can't exactly say too much about, except for that you'll probably hear about it when it comes out, and it will hopefully be next week or this week, and I'll tweet about it. So follow me there, and we can talk about it more when that's... online.
I am grateful to Wired, and now it makes me happy that I paid for the subscription, that they're willing to put the money into assigning people to something that's going to take months to develop. I think that's the kind of news gathering we need from the big news gathering organizations. I'm glad to see that Wired has that resolve.
It's been really wonderful, especially because I feel like there are very few places in tech journalism/journalism in general where people have the time to actually look into stories and give them the attention that they deserve.
So next week, you think?
If all of my hopes, unless something catastrophic happens, hopefully next week. Last couple stages.
Paris Martineau on the Twitter. This will be very interesting.
We'll talk soon, hopefully. Yeah.
Patrick Bejean has a few podcasts of his own. Some of them are in English.
At
FrenchSpin.com.
So I guess, if you speak French, first of all, or if you want to learn, why don't you listen to a podcast on a subject matter you already are familiar with, and listen to Le Rendez-vous Tech, which is on FrenchSpin.fr. You can find it there, and we talk about tech every week. But if you speak English, I have a couple of shows. Pixels is, if you're a gamer, go check out Pixels, really fun show. And if you enjoy talking people from different backgrounds, different cultures, the Phileas Club, go to FrenchSpin.com for the spelling, is a show where I get people from different countries, different cultures, as I said, to sit together every month, and different people every time. And we talk about the state of the world, and sometimes it's depressing, and we try to have fun anyway. We don't always manage, but we really try to have people from all sides of discussions. And that includes people with whom I disagree vehemently very often, but I still listen to and respect.
Yeah. You're really doing great stuff, I have to say. One of the best podcast networks out there, FrenchSpin.com, and for the French...
Thank you.
For the Francophone, FrenchSpin.fr. And my French is a little rusty, but I think you would translate Le Rendez-vous Tech as a hot date with tech. Is that right?
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. Tech, that's absolutely what it
tech
is.
Tech hot date.
That's also you described this week in tech, right?
It is a hot date every Sunday. Mike Elgin, thank you for being on this date.
Thank you.
Don't forget gastronomad.net and upcoming events.
Right.
Still some time to sign up.
Join us in Mexico and Morocco. Can I plug one other thing?
Yeah.
So my son, Kevin Elgin, is in the house.
He's the smart
one in the family.
Love
he's
it
a
when
tech
Kevin
genius.
Shows
and he's
up.
An entrepreneur. Yep. And he's creating a revolution in technology education for kids. He's got a smart speaker that doesn't track kids, that they build themselves physically. It's a cardboard thing. And then they teach it to talk. It demystifies AI.
Oh, that's great.
It teaches social skills because they have to understand what is clear speech and so on. It's a brilliant product. Go to hellochatterbox.com. Sign up for his newsletter. He's got a Kickstarter coming up pretty soon. And the list will keep you informed about the newsletter. So I want to plug that because this is really important for the future of the world. We got to educate kids about technology. And this is the first generation. 23% of American households now have a smart speaker in the house. Kids are learning that there's this AI presence and they're being taught to respect it, which they shouldn't. They're being taught to obey it, which they shouldn't. His technology will teach them that it's just an appliance that they control, and it's a very healthy thing. So anyway,
hellochatterbox.com. Learn a little tech on the side.
Yeah.
This is great. Well, the minute the Kickstarter starts, let me know, and we'll make sure to give you lots of plugs.
Great.
And we'll be one of the first to buy it and build it.
And every kid who does it absolutely loves it. And it's like they get super engaged in building something. It's wonderful.
This is perfect
for you.
You
need to deliver to Europe. Tell your son he needs to deliver to Europe.
Will you sell it in Europe?
I have a one-year-old, so.
Yeah, he says they're going to do it. Yeah, they're going to do it.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah.
This is great. We will absolutely, I'm going to do this with our 16-year-old.
It doesn't listen until they press the button, so it's not always listening.
Oh, even better.
It's really great.
It's got a big yellow button on the top. I like it. Chatterbox at hellochatterbox.com. Kevin Elgin's new project. I can't wait. That's really brilliant. Oh, so cool. Is that a Raspberry Pi in there?
Raspberry Pi.
Nice. So cool. So they're going to learn Python? They do Blockly. There you go. Yeah.
All the parts are either recyclable or reusable. So schools that use this can take apart the cardboard part, and then they reuse the electronics, and it costs the schools, a few bucks per student.
Right.
For this.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
Really?
And the computer of the future, if we want to prepare kids for the future is voice-driven AI.
Yeah.
That's
the
future.
But I think you're absolutely right. It's, I hear articles about parents who are teaching their kids to say please and thank you to Amazon Echo. And it's like saying, teach your kids to say please and thank you to the microwave oven. It makes no sense.
Exactly.
It's teaching them the wrong thing. So this
is
good. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We had a great studio audience. If you can't always promise something as delicious as Piping Hop Roadie.
This is amazing.
No, it's not.
It's carb-tastic. No, it's...
Is it good?
It would be nice to have some Indian food or something.
Put something on it. Yeah, yes. Yeah. But if you would like to be here, you never know. You might get some roadie. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll send you directions, information if you're in the Petaluma area any Sunday, or actually most days of the week because we have a lot of shows all week long. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'd love to see you. You can also kind of participate live with a live stream at twit.tv/live. We've got audio and video there. And a wonderful group in our chat room chatting along with us as we do the shows. irc.twit.tv. Most people, though, listen on demand. That's the whole point, right? To listen to the show when it works for you. A lot of people like to get it for their Monday commute. That's easy enough. If you go to twit.tv, all our shows are there, downloadable audio and video for on-demand use. Or better yet, subscribe in your favorite podcast application. I hear podcasts are hot once again. Go to Spotify, Stitcher, Slacker, Pocket Casts, Overcast, iTunes, Google. There's podcasts apps all over the place. Pick one, subscribe, and get every episode the minute it's available so you can listen on the way to work or all week long because it's a long show and there's a lot to listen to. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit
this is in the can. Amazing.